newfangled technology?
It's a tough world we live in.
All right. I think we are live now.
I heard a beep.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. It's live up there on the top. Look at that. What technology you could possibly... I better plug this little puppy in, huh?
Yeah, fortunately, the new software isn't the most friendly when it comes to software or batteries. So,
that's right.
We're on episode 160 of the Growing with Fishes podcast. We have this week Jeff Lowenfeld. He was first on our show 100 episodes ago.
Hey!
For those of you who don't know who he is, he's a very renowned author. He's written an amazing series called Teaming with Microbes, a fun guy, Teaming with Nutrients, and he's here to talk to us about his new book, and that'll be a really wonderful time. So thanks again for joining us there, Jeff.
Sure. Pleasure. Always.
And then we also,
always.
We also have Roger.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I just figured it out. Okay. Hey, everybody. How y'all doing tonight? Hey, Jeff. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, although I can't see your face here. There's something wrong with it. But...
let me work on it. This newfangled contraption.
That's all right. I know what you look like.
I'm legally blind, so, you know, it's like I'm the buttons are in the wrong spot. There you go.
I hear you. All right. How you doing, dude?
I'm great, man. Fantastic.
That's good. All right. What else we got going on here?
And we also got Josh from Dutch Bloom.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Josh. How you doing?
Good, man. I've said this a couple times before at the conferences, but I like to really just pay homage to you, Jeff, and those books. I mean, you were the spark that really set us all off. And so, dude, thank you so much for your work. And
you know, I'm always humbled by that. I was just thinking about that today. I wrote Teaming with Microbes in... I actually wrote it three times before it actually got published, but in 2006 it came out. And, you know, I mean, I was giving talks to little old ladies in tennis sneakers, you know, and the occasional little old man. And now I am that little old man, but, you know, they were just regular gardeners and the book was just for regular gardeners. I, in a million years, even though I grew cannabis myself, never thought that this book was something that cannabis growers would use. And so, I was dumbfounded when that happened. And I was even more dumbfounded when anybody even picked up Teaming with Nutrients, because it was a book I wrote only for myself. I didn't care if anybody liked it or not. And I'm just, I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. I only wish my parents were alive, you know, for thinking that I was a no good bum. You know, maybe they think I'd be less than a no good bum, but okay. Anyway.
No,
anyway, I appreciate the comment. Thank you.
It's I say it, you know, to uplift you, and just it's also for the community to know, you know, that for me and for a lot of us, we read that book, and I read it in 2008, and it was like, oh, who's Elaine Ingham, and that your book launched me into a whole thing that is, you know, now we're doing this conferences because I read that book,
and
that's how I think about it, and so it's just, you know, dude, it's very cool, like. That was the part of the time that you got to be a part of, and
yeah. Well, it was a lot of fun. Yeah. I mean, and of course, I can't tell you what a change it was in my life. I was, if you've ever gone to any of my talks, you know, you may have heard me say that my family put Miracle-Gro in business, and so as a result, we were very friendly with the family that owned Miracle-Gro, and we used it like no one's business, and so it was quite a change for me when I stumbled on the soil food web in Elaine Ingham, and she really is something, I got to say. But all right, anyway, we digress. Nice to see you again. Sorry, Roger.
Oh, no. I'm just trying to still get the settings right. And I was gifted your books last year by a good friend. Thank you, Sid. You know, a friend of mine out in the north, west, area. And yeah, it is. It's awesome books. And I think whenever we recommend books that people should read to start with, we always recommend yours. So.
Oh God, that makes my day. It probably makes Timber Press's day a little bit more than mine. But anyway,
if it was an accident, you know,
you don't write books to make money. Let me tell you that right now. And if you do, you're in the wrong business.
Steve, do you want to hop in with questions, or can I ask about the next book?
I was just gonna use that to segue into. So why don't you tell us about your newest book?
Sure. Sure. I feel like I'm, you know, this is like a commercial, but that's okay. My newest book is on auto flowering cannabis. It's coming out in October 22nd, they tell me. I've seen the printing, but I haven't seen the book itself, so it's not even, you know, it's still at the printer. And it's going to be called something like DIY Auto Flowering Cannabis, A New Way to Grow, something of that sort. And it's from New Society Press, publishers, which is out of Canada. Quite an interesting, lineup of books they have. And, it's going to be a lot of fun. So the book itself, though, I just have to preface all of my remarks by saying the book was written for those little old ladies and little guys like me, who are just home gardeners. You know, they're running around in tennis sneakers and they're putting in their petunias and they're growing their tomatoes. It was not written, you know, for Dutch blooms and, you know, people that are experienced growers. This is a book for the experienced growers, mother, father, aunt, and uncle. And what it does is it explains a little bit about, why they might want to get into this plant and how to get into it. And it makes a very heavy comparison between autoflower plants and growing tomatoes, because I think they're very, very similar. And in fact, as a regular gardener and as a garden columnist in the Anchorage Daily News and other places, I am making the prediction that this is the next tomato. Tomatoes are the number one most popular plant grown by American gardeners and North American gardeners. And there's no question in my mind that autoflowering cannabis is going to be right up there as soon as we get full legalization. It's a terrific plant, and it's so much fun to grow that it was just a delight to write the book. Even more of a delight to, you know, scrounge around for pictures and learn more about the autoflowering community, which is developing like crazy, and to grow my own. It's just been a delight. So there it is. It's coming out October 22nd again. You can DIY auto flowering cannabis, and you can pre-order it for your mother and your grandfather and your uncle on Amazon right now. So how about that?
So tell us more about things you discovered about auto flowers while you're doing research for this book.
Sure.
Is there any, you know, particular traits that you found were more associated with the or maybe more common with the auto flowers? Or, you know, other mutations that you've noticed in that. And then people typically consider autoflowers to be very low yielding or maybe
yeah.
Look down on them.
Right.
Some of the benefits, and maybe has that changed in recent years?
Sure. Yeah, let's work backwards. I mean, it has changed in recent years. I remember when these things first came out, they were fun to grow. But, you know, if you got two or three flowers, you know, that were maybe that big, you know, you'd be lucky, but they were fun to grow, you know, and you could have one underneath your desk at work or something of that sort. And you could say, hey, look at this little cute little thing here, you know, but that was 1970s. And I would say they continued to be of lower quality until maybe about 5 years ago when they really began to pop. And I've noticed that ever since then, the quality has just risen exponentially. The yields have risen exponentially. The variety numbers, types have, you know, risen exponentially. There's been a real explosion in the breeding and the selling and the using of autoflower cannabis to the point now where in Oregon, there are places, and I'm sure it's true other places, they just haven't investigated enough, that are using only autoflowers for their commercial grow. Okay, so now you say, well, wait a minute. Here's the statistic I heard this weekend. An autoflowering field, 2 foot centers, will grow 6,000 pounds of flowers, whereas a indica sativa grow might be 3,000 or 4,000 pounds. So the yield question is sort of a fool's game. There's no question that an individual plant yields far less. You know, maybe, I don't know, what are we, it was 600, 800 grams, you know, but man, oh man, the potency is every bit as good as anything I've ever used, from a sativa or an indica plant. And when you think about it from a commercial perspective, these things have so many different uses. By that I mean you can use them interspacing, whether it's veg or flowering. These things will grow in 60 to 90 days from seed to flower. They're just phenomenal. You can put them in all your spare spaces and et cetera, et cetera. Now you have to use good genetics, and there's still some crappy genetics out there. And there's still seeds that just are, you know, 50% germination, blah, blah, blah. So you got to really know what you're doing. And fortunately, in addition to this wonderful book I hear that's coming out in October called DIY Auto Flowering Cannabis, there are a number of wonderful resources. And I think the best of which is something called Auto Flowering Network. Autoflower.net. And it's got all the good breeders, all folks who've just been working in this hobby for years and making this plant what it is today. And you've got the access to it right there. So I think it's something people need to pay attention to. Is it for everyone? I think it is. Obviously it's not going to be for everyone. It depends on what your setup is. It depends on, what your desires are, but this could be for everyone. And in terms of the home gardener, this answers the questions that prevent or solves the problems that have prevented indica and sativa plants from becoming commonplace in places where it is legal to grow. And that is a photo period, because these don't have one. They'll bloom based on genetics, 7-9 weeks, maybe 10-11 weeks. As opposed to 5, 6, 7 months. And, it doesn't matter whether it's a increasing or decreasing daylight. It doesn't matter whether you have the lights on 24/7, or they have them on 12/12. And the other thing is that they're small. So they grow 4, 4.5 feet. The big super ones are 4.5 feet. That's a nice plant. That's a tomato. And that'll grow on a deck. That'll grow, on a condo. That'll grow inside. Under lights. So this is a terrific, terrific plant. So there you go. You can hardly shut me up.
let's talk about flavors.
Yeah, let's talk about
flavors. Are you, I mean, I see a lot of, this is kind of a loaded question, but, what I see when I start perusing the category of people that are putting out wildflowers, I see a lot of cherry flavors, which is, common from the ruderalis and the hemp plants. We're looking for the TK, the triangle kush, the OG kush,
sure,
like that.
Sure,
the real,
sure. And,
and
it's all out there. Yeah. I mean, if you go to Mephesto Genetics or Mandalorian, we were just talking about, Double O, I hate to leave any of them off again. They're all listed on that autoflower.net. They have flavors just like you can find with the bigger cousins. So you've got, in addition to the grapes, you got all the lemons, you got some oranges, you got OG kushes. And what I hope happens is that these, we find one that we really love and we use it to breed land race strains. And we force ourselves to get some auto land race strains. There are some already, but I think the genetics on these things, because you can breed so quickly, we're going to be able to really do some pretty interesting things. What a terrific thing, for example, for a vet that doesn't want to go out and spend the money, has a small area they can grow. You can grow your own medicine. So you find one that you like the taste, you like the impact. You want CBD, you want CBG. They're developing everything. Anything you can find in the big boys, you're going to be able to find in autos if you can't already. It's simply amazing. And it's stunning how quickly this has all happened. Because we all laughed about autos when we first heard about them. They were a novelty. They shouldn't be a novelty anymore. And I might add, just so we can complete the circle, they grow so easily in an organic system. And they do this for a couple of reasons. First of all, a plant's a plant's a plant. So, you know, you can team with microbes. It doesn't matter whether you're, you know, an autoflowering cannabis or an indica or a sativa. But these things go so quickly through the life cycle that, you know, I can only imagine a white fly laying an egg. Well, a white fly is a bad example because they don't really infest cannabis that badly, I don't think. An insect laying an egg, you know, and then all of a sudden, huh? Hey, man, what happened? Wait a minute. This doesn't taste like it's supposed to taste. 2 days ago, it was brand new, and now this leaf is mature. You know, they grow so fast that they whiz right through a lot of the problems you would normally have with regular cannabis. If you fertilize the soil too much, they don't do well. Ooh, that's my kind of plant, you know, living soil. You get a good living soil, and you run the thing. And even if it ends up towards the end, you know, you got 2 weeks going, yeah, a little bit of yellow in the flower or something, you know, in the leaves, you go, I don't need to do anything because this thing's going to be finished in a week and a half. I mean, they're really an unbelievably fun plant to grow and a great plant for novice cannabis growers. Now, they have to be cured, so we're going to teach that to people. You know, they have to be dried. We have to teach people how to do this kind of stuff. But, you know, we do the same thing with tomatoes. But I think it's coming. And I think, as I indicated before, we're going to see these things everywhere. They're going to be in the supermarket. They're going to be at the nursery when you go in the springtime to buy your seedlings. They're going to be, you know, seedlings of autoflowers. You'll plant them right next to your tomatoes or put them in your greenhouse right next to your tomatoes. It's a really fun plant. Have you tried to grow them? Any of you guys tried to grow them?
I'm in my second round, so I ran some Sebring genetics earlier this year.
Oh, yeah, wonderful. Yeah, they're great.
I just opened them up and did open pollination to make some seeds, and now I've got two varieties out of my hemp field.
I've done a few. I work for IlovegrowingMarijuana.com, and we've got several varieties of autoflowers. In fact, since I get a little time to speak, because it's funny you said about the different flavors. This month we run a Bud of the Month contest where if you buy genetics from us, you can put a picture in and the whole membership votes on it. And this month was won by a White Widow Autoflower.
Oh, really?
Out of all the genetics on the site, the White Widow Autoflower won the Bud of the Month contest with the popular vote of the membership.
That is something. How big the plant get?
I don't really know. All I get is, you know, they post a picture of a bud, like the real nice cola, you know, and then everybody votes on it. It was real pretty.
Right. I call that cannabis porn. We get it all over.
Yeah, bud porn. You
know, at what point in time are we going to get sick of it? You know what I mean? I mean, because, you know, yeah, you can sort of distinguish a good plant. But after a while, you go, oh, God, they all look good. Who takes a picture of a bad-looking bud?
That'll happen as quality control in the market develops, honestly, right? Because we don't look at beer or cans and necessarily or whatever, you know, what you will, because we have that in our market. But right now, like, we have this picture in our head of the last fucking awesome nug we smoked.
Right, instead of looking at a terpene flavonoid wheel, you know, which is what we really ought to be looking at, some kind of a cannabinoid wheel with a flavonoids in it that tells us what is what. We really have to up our game in that regard, it seems to me. And again, I think autos are going to be a great way to do it.
You guys are on your own on that one. To me, bud porn is like looking at fine women. You know, I'll never get tired of that.
Well, you know, you'll find out. You get a little old and you know, it doesn't make a much. You can look all you want.
Still enjoy it, just not quite as much.
Yeah, just don't touch or compare. Don't touch or compare. That's just the bottom line, you know.
No. I agree with you though on the terpene and cannabinoid profile, the variety on that. And so, is that, you know, variety and terpene and cannabinoid profiles really reaching into the autoflowers? Because that's again been another, you know, downside or, you know, traditional downside or choke point to those genetics.
Right, and now they're there. In fact, I have a chapter or section in my book where I deal with it, you know, and that's where I realized, geez, you know, this is so complicated. The words are not words that we normally use, you know, and they're hard to pronounce, and you know, they look like ingredients on the back of a, you know, some kind of a snack package, you know, cellophane and rafflin and, you know, limonene and So once you get those names down, you go, oh, okay, now I'm getting it. You know, we tend to make the comparison to fruits, just like we do with wines, you know, so we'll get there, but we're not, there isn't a uniform system. So when you go in and you buy cannabis, for example, at a dispensary, they all have a different way of explaining what's there. It's pretty simple, a little compass, you know, with a points towards what's in it, you know, so you know if it's myrcene, it's going to put you to sleep, and if it's got a very little myrcene and caffeine or whatever, however you pronounce that peppery one, then it's not going to put you to sleep, you know. I mean, that's important stuff to know, and we've got that information. It's at our fingertips. Why aren't we using it? I don't know. By the same token, I should add, I think we need to be thinking a little bit more seriously about the packaging on some of these things, like our autoflower seeds and even our regular cannabis. So, for example, when you buy an autoflower plant, some of these plants do not need touching at all. You don't want to pinch them. You don't want to train them. They just do their thing. Others, you know, they probably could use a little quick pinch, although it does put the plant in stress, and you got a lot of time you're losing in the quick life of a plant. But so it'd be kind of nice to see some of these things listed on the back of a package label, you know, not only what the profile of the terpene cannabinoid might be in that particular seed that you're buying, but does the plant need training? Does the plant, you know, is there a special requirement for that seed? I never see that kind of stuff on the back of a package.
No, that's interesting. Thanks for saying that. I mean, segue. We were starting an autoflower, you know, CBD company, and we're thinking about how to package, and like, you know, the traditional cannabis packages are 10 seeds, 12 seeds per pack, maybe 5 seeds and in a vial, and you're protecting for, you know, all this stuff. But if you look at regular seeds, you know, go buy tomatoes, they're in these envelopes, and they're all pretty, you know, generic across. They might have different, you know, designs, but it's a seed pack is a seed pack,
right.
And it's
right.
Usually a whatever.
Right, and I think
we were
given
kind of about going back to that, you know, and if we started doing the same thing you were doing, thinking about, like, if you look on a seed pack, they have these little pictographs with, you know, sun, and then it says the temperature, where you put, you know, and the depth of the seed, and it just tells you all the information, you know, so it's dummy-proof, if you will.
Right, and I think, you know, given the fact that most of the good breeders, if not all the good breeders, are on autoflowering net, maybe we want to, you know, make a suggestion that there is some kind of a standardized label. I mean, you can add other stuff to it, but that at least this information be put on the label so that we can attract the kinds of public users that we want. If you get a mother who grows a tomato to grow an autoflowering cannabis, because she's heard about CBD or she's heard about THC or she remembered smoking the stuff when she was in college, you know, all of a sudden, you know, some of the stigma goes away. These plants are going to take that stigma away. They're too cute. They're too practical. They're too easy to grow. And they're too similar to tomatoes for them not to help take the stigma away. So a nice uniform package, just like the seed industry for vegetables and flowers has a nice uniform. Then you can add all the other stuff you want. Hopefully, it won't be, you know, the naked girl, the naked woman, you know, the lidded, you know, stoner, et cetera, et cetera. Because I really think these plants have the potential of being everybody's favorite plant.
That's awesome. So what are some of the other things, aside from there being a wide variation and pruning from cultivar to cultivar that you've noticed with the autoflowers, what are some of the other things you discovered doing the research for this book and working on this book? I'm sure you discovered a couple of other maybe weird things or quirky things about autos.
Yeah. So there's some pretty interesting, you know, leaf shapes that people run into every now and then. And I think people are going to start breeding those. I saw this really cute little, Australian, plant, little teeny thing called the Australian bastard. Maybe you guys have seen it. And I think that should be an auto. It's going to have a zillion little teeny flowers on it.
Some of that, rolling around.
Yeah, that looked like a pretty cool little plant, huh?
It's crazy. It doesn't look like weed at all.
When
like something, because it looks like weed. It spins out, and it's this one leaf duck thing.
Really weird. Yeah, I saw it at the Emerald Cup, and the guy wasn't there. So it was just sitting at the table, and there was nobody around to tell me what it was. I knew it was cannabis, because why would he be at the Emerald Cup? And I waited. I think I waited about an hour. I had to take the worst pee, but I wasn't going to leave until that guy told me. You know, he came back finally, and I went, oh, that's what it is. Anyway, fascinating. Australian bastard. Whew. Yeah. I wonder how we got the seeds in the country. Okay, we don't want to know. We don't want to know. But and that's one of the problems with these autoflowers is, you know, so fortunately there's no THC in the seeds, and I think they're, you know, it's a very hemp-like looking, it's a very hemp-type seed for mailing purposes. But gee willikers, we got to figure out how to cut through some of this silliness that we've created by insisting on a state-by-state approval for legalization. I mean, it's just kind of dumb that, you know, an autoflower seed that's grown in Colorado, technically, it can't be sold in Anchorage, Alaska. You know,
that's why those gnomes invented that paper plane service.
Right, exactly. And they're hemp. You know, there's no THC in these little seeds. It's when you grow the plant, the THC develops. But you know, we've just sort of, in our attempts to get things legalized, you know, what's the phrase? Cannabis has become the gateway to taxation, you know? What do you got there, Roger? What are you holding up?
I was muted, and I guess kind of here over here in the corner. It's a pain in the butt to get through. I believe I got some Agent Orange here left over. Well, actually, it's a mixture. I actually had made had filled this jar up with Agent Orange, Orange Bud, just because I was going to make coconut oil, and I didn't make coconut oil in time, and it's been curing for 4 or 5 months, and it's pretty damn good, and I thought I'd stoke one up for the show. But it's a mixture of that. Might be some Maui Wowie in there, and maybe some Blue Dream left remnants of something.
Wow.
So it's a blend?
Yeah, did you ever think you'd be old enough to be smoking something called Agent Orange? Oh, well, God.
It's kind of weird when people come up with names.
I don't think people think the reference is Vietnam War Agent Orange, do they?
Yeah,
no.
I've never been appreciative of people naming stuff like that because, really, that was a terrible thing. Agent Orange was a bad thing. BX, wasn't it BX? Or BC? BZ. And Agent Orange was BZ. And really screwed up a lot of people and a whole generation of kids whose father came back having been exposed to that. And a lot of cleft tongue, you know, and kids with deformities and stuff from that Agent Orange originally. But, yeah, I didn't think I'd be old enough to actually talk to somebody on the phone and see them at the same time. So, you know.
My favorite was at Emerald Cup last year. There was a strain called Cokehead Slut. And it was like, yes, I'm totally going to be able to sell a strain called Cokehead Slut to a soccer mom. You know, that's the craziest shit ever. So Jeff, hopefully Jeff will be back.
Good luck. Yeah,
I think Jeff froze up while I was talking to him, I thought so, okay. You see it too. Right.
I'm sure he'll be back.
Oh, hey, Steve.
I was just going to show off. Here's I don't know how much seed this is, but it's a lot. And
a lot of seeds, yeah.
So a lot of seed. These are can you guys read that?
Yeah, that's going to help me a lot. Yeah.
Auto flower. They are auto, O-T-T-O, auto 2, crossed with an auto flower. This is hemp cannabis.
Yeah, we're all getting into that now, huh?
Yeah, something that we're working with just as part of, some stock, but what we're really stoked to work on is this Mongolian cross-check variety that finishes in 5 weeks from the cotyledon. 5 weeks from the cotyledon, dude. This is hemp. So,
you know, we can breed in our flavors and our cannabinoid profiles as we will. We're focusing ourselves on smokable. I've talked to you, Roger, about it, and Steve a little bit today. Smokable CBD, you know, different flavors that the same flavors that we smoke in THC cannabis to bring those into this auto flower hemp realm that it meets that testing. And not only just the testing, but like I think it's a huge market. I was buying some beers today at this Quickie Mart, you know, type deal. And the guy's really cool. He's about my age, and he's kind of an entrepreneur dude. And he asked me about hemp today. And I was like, because he knows I grow weed. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm getting into it. And kind of told him real quick. And he's like, all right, tell me about it, you know. And because he wants to have, he like pointed right behind him, behind the cigarettes, you know, to the cigarette containers. And he's like, you know, that should be weed. That should be, you know, not stuff that doesn't get you high. That just relaxes you like tobacco, but has all the flavors, you know, of cannabis that we enjoy now. And so Jeff's right. Jeff's like, you know, like he has been, is right on it. And it's pretty cool, you know.
Well, I couldn't believe it after you talked to me about the smokable hemp. You know how excited I got about that. And two things happened to me like a couple days later. Well, one, I went down and found out where I buy my Yocan vape pens and stuff. My wife Amy told me that that she was in there and they showed her they've got it packaged. They got smokable hemp in the store packaged, which got me real excited. I'm like, and I've yet to go down there. I need to go down there and buy a package just to see what it is. You know, I'm going to spend the money to buy a package and see what they got. But it's already packaged in the store, like almost before it was even legalized almost. And then the other side was getting adopted by the Carolina Canna Connection to where I'm working towards building a 300-acre farm out here on the islands. So it's really cool. We got an indoor. I can't wait to get some of those genetics from you guys out there because I got we got a custom indoor grow we're doing with Spectrum King Lamps. And then they're going to actually help me convert my greenhouse. And we're going to turn my greenhouse into a hemp greenhouse, like you had talked about. You know, I'm waiting till spring for those fancy seeds that you're going to send me. And then we got the 300 acre open farm. So there's so much, you know, as Steve can attest to and shows us all the time, there's so many different options when you got all that acreage and fields to grow in, whether you do hoop houses or whether you build a big, nice greenhouse or if you just grow outside. Now we're going for industrial more. Now with what we talked about in my greenhouse, I'm hoping to do that. The smokable hemp products, you know, like that can be marketed in the store, like you said, packaged and marketed. But out there, we're going to do industrial. We're going to target the industrial side of it rather than the medical side of it, so to speak. And because of so much acreage, I think it's really cool just to be in that we finally can do it. I mean, Jeff was asking me if I ever thought I'd be alive to hear the smoke Agent Orange, and I can't believe I'm actually alive and I can actually finally grow hemp, you know. So, you know, even though I can't grow cannabis or pot, but I don't know what to call anything. It's all cannabis. That's one thing people get confused about. We can straighten out right now. It's all cannabis, whether it be hemp or CBD or, you know, THC weed. So, yeah, we got to come up with some new terminologies so we know what we're talking about.
So while we're waiting for Jeff to get his kinks sorted out, Josh, what have you been up to? It's been a minute since you've been on.
Yeah, it has. I was just actually texting with my homie that we were talking about full duplex Mandalorian genetics. And I was wondering if maybe we can try to bring him on. I think he's sending me his information right now.
Just send him the link.
All right, I don't know how to do it. If you can, I'm going to put it in the chat, and you can do that, and then I'll start talking about what. But he's part of what I'm doing.
I'm back.
There he is. We're just talking. We're going to get full duplex on here, and
oh boy,
yeah, have a good show. So because he's part of what I'm doing, and so like we were just kind of bullshitting, trying to make up some time, and. What are you doing? I'm like, well, we got to get him on because that's what's going on. So hopefully he'll pop on in a second.
I don't know what happened. Somehow things just died.
No, dude, honestly, when I saw you in at the Vimya event in Vashon Island,
yeah,
I got super inspired, and my mind had already been working towards this, and then I met Full Duplex, and we started rapping, and Leighton, my partner that I do the conference with, he actually moved out here, and we are going full steam. So for the last month and a half, we've been developing my property, 2 acres of breeding property up front, and we have a greenhouse out back that's all dedicated to autoflower, CBD. We're calling it the no-backo, movement.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Right, where we're just basically going to breed in the flavors of, the THC varietals to this autoflower hemp stuff. And that's why I was showing off the stock, was because that's the basis of what we're working with.
Sure. Oh, that sounds tasty. I was just a guy I do a lot of consulting work with named Rudy Ellenbogen, who had the largest organic indoor grows in Colorado, in Denver, called Verde Natural. And really a fabulous dispensary, terrific grower. And he does consulting, and I work with him. And he said to me the other day, I hope I'm not telling a story out of school. He says, I really love to smoke hemp. I said, me too. Oh, my God, it's so tasty. And if you get the good flavors, you're right, a lot of them have cherry. Oh, my gosh, wow. Really fun.
We'll go beyond that cherry, dude. We'll take it all the way. We'll get everything that we have. It's T minus months, right?
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I'm a vaporizer. I vaporize flower, and so if you can get a hemp flower,
let me ask you that. I was going to ask earlier.
Not that kind of vapor. Not oil. I do flower.
No. But what's your favorite flavor? Like, what is your favorite? Strain or cultivar, or range of cultivars, like what would you categorize yourself as?
That's really a tough one. I like uppers. I don't like couch lock. Although I gotta say, I go for a lot of these dark purple Malawi types, et cetera, that I think are kind of indica-y. I love Landrace. I love Maui Wowie and Thai and Durban Poisons. Oh my God. A well-grown Durban Poison is my favorite right there.
So how do you feel about the cookies then? Like segue. Is that in your ballpark of flavor?
In terms of flavor, but what I'm finding is they're too strong.
I'm not talking effect. I'm just.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Flavor. I don't mind some of the flavors. There's sort of a minty kind of flavor to them. I like that quite a bit. But I would say I like the lemons, flavors, the citruses, I guess, And I don't know whether that's because I like the flavors or because I like the highs that they give. I'm into flavors. I mean, I haven't combusted in like maybe 3 years now, which is what I call smoking. Right. Combusting. And so I just vaporize flower in different kinds of flower vaporizers. And wow, it's like wines. The tastes are so much. You can't get the taste after the first hit when you combust, I don't think.
No, well, this is my – I'm so happy to talk about it, especially on air too.
Sure.
When I vaporize, I feel that I get – past to a point where it starts to taste nutty, like soy milk, which isn't necessarily a bad flavor. But when I'm burning a joint and it has to be the right joint, right? It has to be with all the sesquiterps terps. And like, I specifically select for joints because that's what I smoke.
Wow. Yeah.
And so like, I don't know, like to me, there's nothing, and it has to be a fat joint. It can't be.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that, but they don't burn the same. A skinny joint just doesn't burn, and you don't have the when you have a fat joint, it burns slower and cooler like a vaporizer.
Oh, I hear you. I mean, listen, you're talking to a 70-year-old guy. As I like to say, now that my parents are gone, I'm in smoke a lot of different kinds of joints, My favorite, I remember when they used to have papers. This was particularly probably around 1960s, where they had American flag papers with wires in them.
Yeah.
Oh, you remember those, Roger?
It was a built-in roach clip.
still, yeah, I love those.
You still see them now and then.
Probably bad for you, you know, probably copper, lead in our lungs, you know, made out of a paperclip or something. But, oh, God, they were fun, though, you know. Oh, God. Stupid things we do.
Thinking of the old days, yeah.
Yep, indeed.
I remember those, yeah.
I wanted to chime in just on your Durban Poison comment. We actually have some Durban Sunshine. I got it from someone at the conference. I don't remember who. They didn't write their name on the sample that they gave me with the beans. But big shout out to whoever it was. Much love. But all of the cuts we got from that have a real smoky flavor, like a hickory smoked, like a barbecue smoky, like really bizarre, like smoked flavor. I've never smelt that smoky, barbecue-y kind of flavor in cannabis before, and I was wondering if you guys had had that or smelled that at all, particularly in Durbans.
I smoked a lot of different things. I've never, ever had anything that ever tasted like barbecue, except on the 4th of July when we were eating ribs and, you know, something on my hand got on. But no, I mean, that's very unusual. Barbecue, smoky barbecue.
Yeah. At least that's what it smells like. We'll see what it smokes like. Mr. Green Jeans Oreo, and that stuff smells like DMT. It smells like plastic. It smells very unpleasant.
Where are we getting these names? You know what I mean? God darn.
But when you smoke it, it tastes like chocolate. So, you know, who the hell knows? It's like, you know, a chocolate cake shot. You mix hazelnut with a citrus, and it creates a chocolate flavor. So you go with the terpenes and mixing flavonoids and stuff.
Yeah.
The bizarre mimicry.
Sure. Nice. I love it.
I just, we had to pause out with Jeff, but I want to welcome, Full Duplex Mandalorian Genetics to the conversation, and stoked to just have both you guys on, like the two butterflower gurus here on one show.
No. I am not a guru. Oh my God, no way. How you doing, Dan?
I'm good. How are you, Jeff?
Good. Nice to see you. You know, it's funny. We were just talking about half an hour ago, huh?
Yeah. Less than that, I believe.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, we love it. And I hear your germination rate is through the roof.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Schenger shared a nice little tale with me, so it's just flattering, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was a real test, you know. I mean, outdoors, Bashan Islands, whole summer, 100% germination. That's a round of applause.
And Shango knows how to select them because he sent me some of his Bashan Zulu, and they're the fastest finishing things in my entire property right now.
Wow.
Oh, I got to get a
which says a lot because I have a lot going on, and, you know, so good up on Shango. He knows what he's doing.
Well, yeah. I think I got my AFN or L5 is yours, right?
That's correct. That is mine. L5.
Shango sent me that one. Or I got it, I guess, at the talk.
Yeah. I think that's where you picked it up. You like it so far, I see. Yeah.
Oh, boy. I'm missing it. I'm out of town right now, and I got a house sitter right now, and I hope it's being taken care of the way it should be taken care of. Whoa! Biggest colas I have seen on any plant. Yowzer.
That's flattering, and thank you very much. I really, really appreciate that. I really do. I'm glad that she's turning out for you. I noticed you harvested a few before your trip, and it's kind of an honor that you left her behind to see how she finished.
Yeah, you know, the other ones, I just say I got to just do it because I just had to do it. But, you know, I wanted a couple of pictures so I could have it for the talk. But that one was just too pretty.
Thank you.
Yeah, stunner. All right. Anyway, so what else are you growing? What other kind of stuff do you have out there?
Myself?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got, one of the other lines is Anvil. Anvil is a heavy indica dominant strain, autoflowering variety. And she does offer some beautiful color. She's got a very broad palette of purples, blacks. I'm starting to see some reds come out in her, too. Just the, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, anthocyanin, I think, it's produced, is really the component that's really forcing those colors out. And
now a lot of times that's temperature.
Yes, I have seen temperature trigger with that, or a phosphorus lockout. If you've got a phosphorus deficiency, a lot of times that'll, you know, trigger your purple hues and things of that nature. But I've also seen the purple in these come out in 100-degree temperatures in rooms, stuff like that.
Right.
So one of the big factors with anthocyanin production, and one of the things I see people screw up, they either don't have enough molybdenum or manganese, but in particular molybdenum. If your molybdenum levels are not high enough or right in your soil, it doesn't matter if it's organic or synthetic for your source. There's organic and synthetic sources depending on what your preference is, but you know, obviously we always lean towards organic on the show. But that really will prohibit the maximum potential. I noticed when I was growing in Colorado, we had a strain called Warlock, and that would be purple, normally kind of a purple strain, but if I gave it a lot of anthocyanin, I could make that strain almost black.
Wow.
And people love anything that's not neon green. It's called, you know, people love that sales appeal. So make it as sexy as possible. And the other thing is, if you're doing, say you screw up and you're running too much nitrogen, and this is real common in cannabis, be it soil or aquaponics or hydroponics, people run too high nitrogen or they realize it too late, you know, halfway through flower. If your molybdenum isn't high enough, particularly with aquaponics where you have nitrates more than ammonium, molybdenum is actually responsible for that protein production that converts that nitrate back to ammonia, which the plant uses in that way, because it plants don't use nitrate in that nitrate form. They have to reconvert it back to ammonia. So if your molybdenum levels aren't high enough, they won't properly use that. I've actually seen aquaponic lettuce production farms that had zero molybdenum, detectable molybdenum. Sorry, I got a little bit of a tooth issue. Zero detectable molybdenum issues in the water, and they actually had nitrogen deficiency in the lettuce. And we actually treated it by treating the molybdenum and fixing it that way rather than touching any of the nitrogen, because the nitrogen was perfectly fine. But they had stripped it out completely because they're running nitrates between 120 and 160 for months and months and months and months and months and months and months. So the plants were uptaking more molybdenum than they normally would be, but I'm sure this has happened in cannabis as well. So, you know, if you have molybdenum and you add a little bit of extra molybdenum, it will increase that purple anthocyanin production as well as, you know, account for if you screw up on the nitrogen.
Well, if you have soil, though, you usually don't have a molybdenum problem. Usually. Aeroponics, yeah, hydroponics, aeroponics.
Absolutely.
Something you gotta watch. Yeah. I'm a soil guy. You can tell I'm a soil guy, you know.
Me too, dude. I'm a soil and fish guy. I honestly think, you know, and Steve, I don't know if you know this, Jeff, but Steve's really, I think, in my opinion, kind of hit a cool way of combining the two and doing the soil pots. It's called a dual root zone where half the pot is soil and then a burlap layer and then half pot is hydroponic, you know, cool. Hydrogen, and then puts it into an aquaponic flood drain scenario.
Huh.
So you get both the terrestrial and the aquatic ecosystems.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
And and diatoms are created a lot faster in the aquatic ecosystem.
Oh, I can well imagine. I used to go to Garden Writer conferences with a woman named Sylvia Bernstein, who was the woman who wrote the popularized aquaponics book. You know, when she first started to describe it, you know, everybody went, boy, this makes a lot of sense. You know, fish. People really got into it. And then.
And she hired Steve. She hired Steve.
Ah, there you go.
So just that you're on the right
track. There you go. There you go.
Behind the app.
But I don't think the home gardener has jumped into it the way they should. Because I think it's the way to grow in your kitchen myself. But.
A large part of it is no one's dumbed it down to the level of simplicity of hydroponics or part A, part B, or that, you know, what everyone's used to, and it's still kind of this mystical thing. You have half, you know, a lot of the people in the industry are still saying, feed your fish and magic happens and plants grow, and, you know, there's more to it than that, especially when you get to high-value crops or high-demanding crops like cannabis or you know, fruiting crops or, you know, melons or berries or whatever else, it gets into a problem. But we have you guys on to talk about.
I was gonna follow. This is a question for both you, Steve, and Dan, and maybe Jeff, whoever. aquaponics and other flowers. Any experience or thought, or you know, any thoughts? Maybe Dan, you could hit first.
Not with aquaponics directly. Majority of the time has either been deep water culture, or some sort of flood and drain or aeroponic style of growing. They thrive in it. Given, you know, one thing I'll touch on real quick is root volume is key for autoflowers. You know, we were talking when I was up there, and, you know, the more space that you give them, it's going to increase that veg time. And in that environment, I've seen plants that typically, you know, one like what you're running, Jeff, actually from the same variety, yield 1.25 pounds in a 28-gallon reservoir, whereas that same plant in a 5-7 gallon, you know, you're lucky to get, you'll get over a few ounces. It's hard to really say, but, like, I've seen the tests on them, and they thrive in it. So I can only imagine in an actual really healthy, potent environment like aquaponics that they'd really explode. Thank you.
So are you saying that when the plant starts to get root bound, that's when it stops really producing the way you want it to?
Yeah, from what I've seen, it's not so much. It's a combination of both sidewall and vertical drop. For instance, like if it's in a 4-inch pot, you know, 4-inch by 4-inch square, you know, transplant pot, they're going to flower really quick. They're going to flower ahead of time. You can use the same 4-inch diameter, but if you give that a 7-inch drop, you're going to notice that plant actually increase. So there's something about, yes, the root circling, the root bound, you know, plant, kind of like a pepper plant when you walk into Home Depot. You know, you see right. those tiny pepper plants with peppers on them already. Well, right. you know, they've triggered because they got no more root room.
I guess
that was part of like my question, you know, pushing on toward, you know, like aeroponics, you know, you can potentially have an unlimited, you know, you know, because you're right, we all know that the roots on aeroponic or hydroponic or even aquaponic plants, they're different roots than a soil root. They have more fibers and they uptake a lot more and they're thinner. You know, and I'm sure we've all seen and experienced the massive hydroponic or aeroponic growth. And so how does that play out? Do you just get a massive vegetative growth out of in like some of these autos, or is it cultivar specific?
So I think it's a little bit of both, to be completely honest and transparent about it. Like cultivar specific genetics play a huge role in it. You know, if they're not selected for a larger structure or an increased veg time, that's going to play a tremendous fact in the end result. However, I do believe it increases the potential of any plant given the root volume. So, you know, you're going to get a little bit better plant, even if it stays smaller than what you would have in a root-bound environment, say like a pot or in the ground or anything of that nature.
You know, it's interesting. In the book, I tell people don't transplant. Put it right in the original pot, you know, because I think if it does get root-bound, everything else aside, because these things grow so fast, that just slows it. That does slow it down is not the right word, but it takes up valuable time.
Correct.
The other thing is that the roots themselves sort of they act like sort of mycorrhizal fungi. A lot of times, mycorrhizal fungi do the same thing. If you have mycorrhizal fungi that have infected a plant root, they'll grow and they'll be happy. Then, you know, they won't sporulate until the roots and therefore the fungi themselves become root bound or fungi bound. I guess I don't know if that's the right word. And these are sort of the same kind of way. They get to touch that wall and start to circle, as you say. They flower. I mean, they're going to flower quickly anyway. But I mean, they not only flower, but they just zoom through it. I mean, it's really. They're unbelievable plants, but you got to treat them the right way, no question.
I've found that aquaponic autoflowers tend to grow a little bit faster in veg. You tend to get a large plant. The plants really take advantage of the nitrates and grow a little bit faster with a heavier nitrate environment. That can mm-hmm. become a problem in terms of reducing bud size and flower if it's not managed correctly. But we've talked about that in previous shows and just making sure that you cut back your nitrates, particularly in flower, to make sure you aren't, you know, reducing bud size or creating, you know, additional new growth that can screw with the plant, or even hermit if in extreme cases.
Or grow in soil, in which case I don't even fertilize. I mean, again, you get a good soil, good living soil to start with, you probably don't need to fertilize. And if you do, the plant will tell you right away. So,
absolutely. But
and pH.
I've personally only grown auto flowers on three separate occasions in aquaponics. Only one time did we run it with a soil control. And in the one time we did run it with a soil control, the auto flower plant was larger than in terms of square footage, leaf count, and branch count than the soil. But again, it's not a secret that plants veg faster in aquaponics. That was to be expected. We know that because of the nitrate difference versus the nitrate to ammonia balance with the nitrogen. It's going to cause accelerated growth in that veg phase. So that was kind of exactly what we were expecting out of it. But that wasn't, you know, we weren't doing a lot of hardcore terpene testing. I'd love to recreate that now that I have a much better facility. We'll have an in-house HPLC at the extraction facility and everything else. We'll be able to do a ton of in-house testing, you know, to a brutal degree here, so we won't really have to worry about relying on other people. So it'll be really great. Plus, we'll also have, in the future, work with Langston University so that we actually have our peer-reviewed, so we're not just saying, hey, you know, believe all of our stuff. No, here's actually third-party testing, too, that backs it up. You know what I mean?
I have a comment and a question for Dan as a follow-up, if it's all right. First of all, the question or the comment is, I never got an auto flower because I harvest my trichomes to finish in under 110 days. And then when you were talking about using larger reservoirs or larger pots to extend the vegetation period, which makes perfect sense, how much longer are you talking about on the back end for finishing?
So I could say it depends on the root growth. I would say you could look at about a 2-week increase, potentially sometimes 2.5. That sounds terrible. I'll switch back out of this. Give me 1 second, guys.
No worries. I just wanted to have a quick shout out. Big thanks to Dirtman Dan. Dirtman Dan helped me get Zoom all set up so that we could actually host the show tonight and host a show in the future. So big thank you to Dirtman Dan from Embracing Organics. Thank you again, man.
Thank you, brother.
Took the time to help me get this all set up, so much appreciated.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me better now? Is that better?
Yes.
All right, good. Yeah, sorry, I apologize about that. I was just trying to hear over the road noise out here. If I was inside, we'd have an angry little man trying to interrupt the conversation.
It's all good, Ben. Kids are part of life, and we love them. So.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way. But to get back on your question there, 2.5 weeks, I think it would extend the time. Now on most of the stuff that I run is anywhere between 75 and 90 days, depending on the pot size. I do a lot of multi-potting with them as well. 10-gallon pots and a nice organic soil is key. I think that I've seen my best growth rates as well as my best harvest so far that way.
Wait a minute. Even though you do hydro juice, said generally, in deep water culture and stuff like that, you find that your best growth rate and your best product was actually in an organic soil in a pot? Instead of deep water.
I honestly, my best flavor profile, best trichrome production, end bag appeal, for lack of a term, was better. The deep water culture grows that I've done have been a long time ago. The gentleman that did the test for me said that yield was picked up, but he didn't notice much of an increase as far as like terpene profiles and stuff like that. I think there's a lot to do with those microbes causing that.
Yeah, I think we're all getting it because I was a commercial hydroponic grower, and I did drift to waste, and I also did a lot of deep water culture and ebb and flow and stuff like that. But we're all doing the same thing. We're heading down that natural farming, you know, an organic farming type road, and it's really interesting how it's all come together. But that's interesting you say that because, okay. But, yeah, so 10 to 20 days extra
depending on the how big of a extra pot or bigger reservoir you use. So you're looking at, so yeah, so like I said, I've never been able to, by looking at trichomes, I've never been able to finish an autoflower yet in under 110 days. So
I got one I'd love to send you then. It will finish the maximum. The maximum I've ever seen it is 70 days.
Wow. I'd love to try that because I work for a seed bank and they don't we've got auto flowers and all, but again, by the way, hi there. My name's Rod. I'm Roger and I'm from ILoveGrowingMarijuana.com and I was fortunate
a couple
of years ago to hook up with Steve through Aquaponic Dummy and I've been here. They can't get rid of me. So here I am. And yes, I would love to try some of your stuff out. And if you want to, I can shoot an email into the chat. And so you can get my email if you want.
Absolutely. You know, if I can change one mind at a time, that's the goal. You know, not so much change of mind, but I guess open the mind to another possibility of something new, you know, a new project and something to play with. And the nice thing about this line, it's got a great med effect. It's one of my favorites. It's got a high percentage of CBG at harvest, which has been tested at 3%. So
which line is it? Sorry.
That's the gem.
The gem.
The gem.
I'm smoking the Alf right now. Is that right? That's what you gave me?
Yeah, that's what I left behind. Yeah.
Yeah. All right on.
Yeah. Excellent. You know, you'll shortly be able to take part in some. I can't wait for your report, man. I think I'm excited about that the most.
Oh, the smell on that plant is just.
Is she showing you pink pistils or are they all white?
Well, they weren't. They were all white when I left.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I didn't mean to interrupt. I apologize. What I'm showing, like one of the signature things that's really starting to come out heavy in her is pure pink pistils. Very early on.
Nice.
That'll be a big seller when somebody sees that. But yeah, for sure.
It does pretty well.
I shot you an email in the chat for you.
I got it, copied it, and I'll reach out to you once we're done here, and we'll talk. Yeah,
so we had a question from chat. Jeff, you had done a talk, actually it was on the Duke Grow Show, I actually just watched it earlier today, and you had talked about, again, defoliating. Can you talk about that and why you feel that's not the best?
Yeah, I don't like defoliating. You know, in fact, I'm trying to think of a nice, clever article.
Is that because you live in Alaska?
No. It's because scientifically, I can't find scientifically a real reason to do it. To me, if you don't have good lights, you might need to defoliate to try to improve your lights. But really, that's the problem of your lights, and you really shouldn't be defoliating because you're taking off a photosynthesizing factory that is feeding those buds one way or another. And the idea that you lollipop the bottom one, you know, take the bottom one thirds off, to me, it's just crazy. You know, and I think I said this at the show, you know, if you have to do anything, move the leaf out of the way. Clip it back someplace. Don't cut it off. That leaf is feeding that. The only reason that plant's alive is to create a flower so that it can continue the next generation. And everything that plant does, I think, is designed, if I can be theological about it, to do that. And so when you cut off a leaf that's supposed to be there, craziness. If it's brown, cut it off. Put it on the ground. But if it's green, it should be feeding that plant. Now, why do people cut things off? Well, let's see. They cut them off in order to get more light onto the cola. That cola is not growing because of the leaves that are in that cola, as far as I'm concerned. That cola is going because there are big fan leaves and little fan leaves that are all over the plant feeding the hell out of it. And so whether it's in light or not, it's still going to be a nice-sized cola. I just don't get it. I don't know any other plant where we do this.
Well, to be honest, okay, we do this with tomatoes.
When do we do this with tomatoes?
With commercial growing commercial tomatoes. Indeterminate varieties on a single. They've a bunch of universities in organics.
Okay, different sections. Indeterminate, different thing.
Right.
you hold up the pole and you prune every set, so you're setting clusters of fruits, right? And that's how I think about it with cannabis and how we got to this point.
I think you're wrong.
You're mostly right, but I want to caveat, like, when you're in this weird indoor scenario, that I see the argument for creating more bud sites, because it's indoors. I don't want to grow, and even outdoors as a commercial grower, I don't want to grow a big fistful cola. It doesn't work for commercial production. I want to grow golf ball nugs and more golf ball nugs. So I want to, in my bud setting, I want to create more set opportunities. And I think, you know, there's discussion for that. But for the home grower, like, and people who are just like ripping, you know, a ton of families off, I think you're right. You know,
okay, now wait. So maybe we're talking about two different things. Are you talking about pinching the plant in order get it to branch? Or are you
talking about
skin?
Removing fan leaves to create more light to create more bud sites.
Yeah,
but does it?
We just did this in the field where I'm at, where we went through and we very selectively took just the handful of leaves that were overly shading a large percentage of the foliage below it, and for the purpose of increasing that. Now, I have not done, to be fair, I have never done a straight side-by-side. I will 100% give you that. But I have noticed that when there is more light on the buds, they do tend to swell more. Now, whether or not that is immediately lost in the drying process is to be, you know, here or there. But I am personally, in my personal growth style right now, a big fan of slowly defoliating at the last, you know, week to week and a half of the plant and withering it down to just the buds, you know, the last 48 hours or so before harvest, just to get those last waters and sugars and other things into the plant.
And that makes a total sense. I'm specifically talking about...
No, it doesn't. It doesn't make any sense. It makes scientific sense.
Now, I love Jeff.
Let him tell us. All right, we'll shut up and let...
Please put me in my place.
Well, I mean, you're taking off a factory. You're taking off some photosynthesis. Where do you think that stuff is going? It's not producing starches that go down into the root in these plants. It's going into the flower itself. And those big fan leaves are the ones that really do it. You take off all those big leaves, and I think everybody will admit, you get all the light you possibly can on the bud sites, you still get shitty dope. Those leaves are necessary to feed the plants. And if you're dealing with an autoflower plant, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're dealing with an autoflower plant and you take those leaves off, you're losing a significant portion of that plant's lifetime energy. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. Scientifically, it makes no sense whatsoever.
And that's where I think that I'm looking at managing a canopy, and that's what I was talking about, you know, in my own defense. I agree with you. I'm looking at managing a canopy of flowers or plants.
Get better lights.
I'm outdoors.
You can have lights outdoors too, you know. I mean, that's what
I have. Yes, I
know.
Yeah,
I mean, okay, all right, I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, no, like, for getting more bud sites in the area, like, there's times and a place. And in reality, in commercial production, I don't want to be doing that, Jeff. Like, it's cost me money and time. Like, I have no desire to be doing that. So, like, that's why I'm so intrigued about book, October, hanging out with Dan. Like, I'm playing the drums like this is a – I'm excited
my book's not for you guys, though. My book is for the beginning.
Right.
So, and I tell them, don't pull those leaves off. I hope I
can. If anything, tuck them. You know,
tuck them.
You know, tuck them down. You know, if you want to expose that lower growth and create the more bud sites that you were talking about, absolutely, you know, tuck them. It's not going to hurt them to be tucked. The only thing is, you know, make sure your airflow is right, especially if you're growing in an indoor environment. You know, management is going to be key.
I've even taped them. I've clipped them. I've taped them. Anything but cut them. Oh, my God, I like to keep them. And if you do cut them, oh, my God, put them in the ground. You know, on the ground so that the goodies go back into the soil and feed those microbes that feed the plant. But, of course, you guys are doing aeroponics, so it doesn't make any difference.
No, I'm with you there, 100%.
Yeah. So So here's the latest thing that I'm looking at lately, and I'm trying to find more papers on it. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard this thing called rhizophagy. And I'm wondering how it relates to aeroponics versus soil-related stuff. So here's how the system works. In soil, I don't know whether it works in aeroponics or hydroponics at all, but it's a bacterial activity that is analogous to the mycorrhizal fungal activity with regard to roots. It's called rhizophagy, R-H-I-Z-O-P-H-A-G-Y. The bacteria from the soil go into the root at the root tip. They go in the root, and as they go in through the root cell, they strip off their cell wall themselves. They're oxidized inside the cell. The goodies that are in them get taken up by the root. The bacteria continues to move through the plant to the cell wall, I mean to the root wall, and then a root hair forms, and the root hair grows. The bacteria goes out the root hair to the tip of the root hair and is ejected out into the soil, where it puts back on its cell wall, picks up more nutrients, and then goes back into the root again. And every time it comes out, a new root hair is created.
No, but I bet you no one's ever studied that in an organic aquatic environment in regards to terrestrial plants.
Well, very few people have studied it in an organic soil environment. I mean, rhizophagy, fascinating. And the last science magazine or science, they had pictures of it operating, showing these bacteria going into the roots. You know, and what I take away from this, it very well may be that root hairs are there to act as exit sites as opposed to intake for nutrients, but rather exit sites for the bacteria that are cycling through those roots. Whoa! Craziness. So I wonder whether that happens in an aeroponic situation.
Oh, yeah. No, that sounds that what you just described fills a lot of blanks in the typical root structure of aquaponic plants. And actually, Josh from Dutch Blooms is also done commercial aquaponics. I'd love for you to also chime in on what your experiences were with root structure. But that sounds a lot like it fills in a lot of the blanks and a lot of the question marks with the aquaponics model. And that might be, you know, who knows, maybe there might be a whole bunch more in an aquatic environment.
There's a loop that, Layton, that does Kingdom Aquaponics, he's my partner for the conference. This is what him and I really rallied around. Like, we are, and Elaine as well, are just baffled by the what is going on in fish shit. Straight up, that period. What is going on in fish shit? And so the relationship between fish shit and roots, and then now we talk about delivery, you know. So there's, you know, you can harvest fish shit, and you can stabilize it and apply it and brew it, and that's what Layton does. And then there's aquaponics, which does it, you know, traditionally just by putting plant roots in water with fish shit. And what Steve is gotten into is breaking it up into the terrestrial and the aquatic, which is super interesting to me because I'm an emotional and a gut gardener, you know, like, so I have an aquaponic system that I use to harvest fish shit and I grow plants like Steve in the dual root zone, but I really, my intention with it is to harvest the fish shit to put into another brewer and brew out that biology and apply into my soil garden. Because I'm at my heart, I believe being connected to the earth and to the deep water within is really where I want to be. And I'm seeing that result in my greenhouse after 2 years of applying this style of fish shit to my garden. I haven't watered. I watered once when I planted seedlings, and you saw it, Dan. Steve saw it. You know, they are pruned back, and it's an amazing thing that it's happened from my 2 years of adding compost tea, aka fish shit, via, you know, compost tea. So go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I was going to say, do you see a difference when you look under a scope, if you look under a scope, between the roots that are in the soil versus the roots that are in the I mean, I know you talk about a thicker cortex.
So that's why I say hydroponic, because
what about the root hairs?
The root hairs are like hydroponic hairs in aquaponic gardens. Like they're more fibrous, you know, they're different than a soil root hair, which is more coarse and thick and has to be stronger to push through the soil. And when they get in that environment where it's aeroponic, hydroponic, aquaponic, let's say, they have less resistance and they have a faster delivery of nutrients uptake. So they just reach out, and it looks more like boom. It just goes out everywhere versus stronger roots that are the stronger ones that are surviving, you know, type deal in a soil, a terrestrial environment. Does that sound about right, Steve?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, in fact, we just posted a picture of one of the moms, and we moved them over, and a massive, massive hairy root systems in all the aquaponic plants. You know, the bottom half of the roots look completely different, and I've posted numerous pictures. If you go to my Instagram, we have a whole bunch of different side by side comparison pictures showing soil plants versus aquaponic plants.
Have you ever, sorry to cut you off, have you ever done like a plexiglass where you can, you know, to be able to show that, you know, the root structure of the soil roots versus the aquaponic roots below?
I haven't done a live one like that, but I have done it where we wash the roots off afterwards and you can see the night and day difference where that has the finer roots in the soil and then there's some thicker, non-hairy roots in between where it has that transition layer. And then it goes down to the bottom, and then it's all hairy again. And you can see that if you look at my Instagram.
It's like so, I mean, Jeff just, it's brilliant, you know, to see like them. They go soil to the hydroponic media.
I want to give a quick shout out to everybody for you. That was a nice suggestion for research, but you do not want to put plexiglass tops over your solution so that you grow algae. So, you know, just saying.
Yeah, well, you could cover up with some sort of dark
media. Yeah, you say cover it up and then look at it. Okay. I want to, you know how people are out there going, oh, I'm going to build me a reservoir with a clear.
Right. No, you have to plant. Roots are air, sunlight, and air prune. Looks like, Dan, you want to say something on this topic.
I do. I kind of want to throw y'all a curveball on that one.
Please do.
Yeah. So, a lot of the plastics now are offering UV protection. Those plastic totes you buy at Walmart, you buy, you know, Home Depot, wherever to store your stuff in, they got a UV layer in them now to where it seems to, you know, keep the roots from growing that algae you were talking about. I helped a friend grow some tomato plants indoors in a deep water culture system, and he bought clear containers. And I told him, I said, you're going to get pythium, you're going to see a bunch of algae, you're going to see a bunch of nasty stuff. And after 6 weeks in the grow, it changed my mind about how the actual UV protection seemed to have benefited that, and we could actually watch the root system. So whether it was just that style or brand, it was very, very – it was interesting to watch, for lack of a better term. It went against
technology.
I never thought about exposing a root system.
Hi, Tara. We're getting deep into autoflowers.
I see that. Hi, guys. Nice to see you again, Jeff.
Hello, Tara.
You're muted, Jeff. Hi. Hi, Roger.
Hey, John. Hey.
How's Dan doing? How are you? Nice to see you again, too. I saw you up at that KNS class, too. Mm-hmm. Sorry, not to derail the conversation, but hope you guys are having a great night, and I love this conversation. I've been listening for a while. So go ahead.
Come to think of it, Dan does kind of look like Chris, too. When Chris cuts his hair short and grows his beard out, y'all can be brothers. It looks like brothers.
Well, they say you got a twin everywhere, right?
A doppelganger, right? Isn't that what they call it?
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah. I have one in Philadelphia. I go to the Philadelphia airport occasionally, and people go, hey, they go, who are you talking to? You. I go, not me. They go, yeah. Okay, sorry. So if you're listening, Doppel, whatever you call it, Doppel, in Philadelphia, contact me. Well, that was a good conference this weekend. We, you know, it was fun that Shango, you know, he's so into the auto flowers from a health perspective. You know, I mean, it's just such a great patient plant. You know, he gave a terrific talk, and I mean, I think people are really encouraged. They're ready to go. I hope so. This is something we all really just got to be pushing.
And he also gave out seeds to medical patients, which I picked up some.
Yeah, when I went out to the actual K&F class, I passed out a bunch to Pacific Northwest Roots to hand out to patients for the next day. That way everybody can get a little taste, grow some at home, get an experience, see if they like them. I really, you know, it's exciting, Jeff, and I got to tell you, I've been waiting 10 years for somebody's excitement to come out like this to make sure that I wasn't crazy and that I wasn't believing in something that didn't have a future. But, you know, I'm glad to see that the potential is being broadcasted in a good light. You know, you hear so many negative things, but I think the tides are turning on that.
Totally, man.
What the hell happened?
There we go. I was
going to say, like, it's so cool of you, Dan, to have been, like, on this mission, you know? For the last decade growing with auto flowers, like, you know, cause I wasn't on that mission. You know, I was doing my thing with THC and photo period and meeting you and yeah, dude, big props.
Well, I appreciate it.
For having that insight, dude, you know, yeah.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. You know, that means a lot. And I guess I kind of always saw some potential in them and, never really gave up on them. They met my needs, you know, as a patient, like, For one, pain. I had a quick turnaround for medication, and, you know, and Jeff, as you know, they're fast. They're quick. You know, you never really had to go that long without if you really didn't need to. And I saw the potential there. Never really imagined it would get to this scale, but hey, you know, it's fun to be on the ride. I'm glad I kind of stuck along with it.
Hey, it's just beginning. I mean, there is just simply no question about it. It is just beginning.
Oh, yeah.
I'm dumbfounded. I mean, I sort of discovered you guys. You know, I always tell a funny story that I tried to get on Autoflower Net so that I was doing this thing in the middle of the winter. In the wintertime, I travel. I give a lot of talks. Not enough. I love to give talks, but I travel an awful lot. And so it's really hard for me to grow, you know, to be able to take the pictures. And my wife doesn't like the smell and blah, 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 blah. So I needed some pictures for the book. And that's the hardest part about writing a book is getting adequate pictures. Really right. Hard to do. And so I, you know, I go on Autoflower and I ask for some pictures and I get banned right away.
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing something bad, you know, and I can't get on. I'm trying 15 different ways. I'm sending out 4 messages a day. Nobody's paying any attention, you know. I think finally I ran into, I forget who, Kiss Organics, you know, finally got in touch with you, I think. And, that was fun. But anyway, it's a terrific website, and it's got so much stuff on it. You've done it, and you're at the ground floor. This is going to go and go and go and go. And it's wonderful. You have your own annual convention.
Well, that one, yeah, they had the first one this year. It was put on by another gentleman in the community. And, you know, they put together an event that honestly it'll be a memory for me for a lifetime for multiple reasons. It was good to be around a crowd of like-minded people, but there to celebrate something that we all saw potential in, you know.
Right.
And to meet people that I've actually got to interact with, you know, through the site, you know, face-to-face and see it. So, yeah, we got, you know, there's a lot going on with it. And like you said, there's a ton of information. And I apologize about the banning part, you know.
No. It makes for a good story.
Oh, it does make a great story, and I got to laugh. You know, I got to hear you speak over on Vashon, and, you know, of course, you brought it up there, and I'll never forget, you know, I talked to the few other admins. I was like, guys, you have no idea what you've done. This is legitimately looking for, you know, great information, what we've been trying to provide, and we banned him. You know, so, but, yeah.
Well, hopefully I've given you guys enough credit, and hopefully I haven't let anybody off the list. And again, I think this is going to go big, big, big time. I mean, we haven't seen it on NPR yet. You know, it's not, but it will be because because this is it. This is the plant that everybody's been waiting for. This is. I remember when they introduced snap peas. You know, again, you guys are probably all too young. Even Roger's too young.
Hey, I'm 62. I'm pretty much remember. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, they introduced snap peas. Nobody knew what a snap pea was. You know, and they came out of nowhere. And man, every gardener in America had to try a snap pea at least once. And now half the gardeners in America grow them. You know, same thing's gonna happen here. It's ready. And if we had, you know, if this book had come out 5 years earlier, it would have failed. I mean, I think the book would have failed, and I think Autoflowers would have failed. I mean, they just, you know, they weren't ready, and I think they are now. And again, from my perspective, every 6 months they're geometrically better than they were 6 months before, and I don't know how you can get any better than they are now. I just don't.
It's their quick cycle. The selection process goes quick. You know, I mean, with the ability to turn something around, and if you know, one of the things that I like to talk about is the ability to control the flower rate. Yes, you know, if you put them in a small pot, you're going to hurt your yield. But for somebody doing a selection to get an idea, you know, a quick thing to get a quicker turnaround to make it what you want, keep it a little smaller. You know.
Yeah. To breed.
I want to go deep on like the breeding selection concept, if you will.
There, can I ask a question from chat really quick?
Yes.
They're asking if Dan, if the seeds are for sale. They've asked several times. So, Dan, are the seeds available for sale?
DC Seed Exchange and Oregon Elite Seeds.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Tara. Now I just lost it.
Oh, wait. Are they listed under Mandalorian, or are they listed?
They are.
Under those? Okay.
They are.
Don't forget that, folks, under Mandalorian as well.
Cool.
Josh, you said you wanted to go really, really deep. That was what you were saying.
And then I lost it.
Okay, and then there was another question in chat. It says, my autos are small and flowering tiny, old seeds with a question mark. My guess is that's not necessarily right.
Light? How's your light? Is it bright?
Have you overwatered it? Have you underwatered it? You know, what kind of stress you inflicted upon that plant? Because a lot of that determines when it's on top of, that's the other complexity, but the other determining flower factor is stress level. If that plant goes into a panic, for lack of a better term, it's going to start flowering at whatever size it's in.
Do you think that's true for all cannabis genetics or specific to Ruderalis?
I think it's specific to Ruderalis. I think that is the genetic code in it, the survival trait. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I've reached a harsh climate. I've reached something that isn't suitable for me, so I need to reproduce. I need to do it now, or I'm going to lose the potential to carry on the bloodline.
So, yeah, any stress, from what I've seen with autoflowers, it causes it to flower immediately.
Yep.
It could be 2 inches tall. You stress it somehow, it's going to flower and be a 6-inch tall plant. You know,
if you're lucky.
What I was going to ask earlier is in breeding, you know, you guys were talking about the fast rate of, you know, 6 months where this stuff is growing. And that's true, but, like, my question is, what are the hardships of breeding with autoflowers? You know, we've talked about this personally, but, like, if you wanted to just talk about, you know, like, it's not like I can't grab a male and reverse it, you know.
What is it? One out of four actually is auto out of the first generation, if you're lucky?
If you're lucky. So, yeah, I mean, basic, yeah, 25%. You know what I mean? If you're using a regular, you know, photosensitive mother or father and you introduce that to a male-female auto, you know, you're not going to see stability until at least F3, and that's when your numbers will flip. You'll see 75% show the auto trait, 25% will be still holding on to the, you know, original parents in a hodgepodge expression.
I was more asking, like, so I'm looking for a specific trait, and I have, you know, auto flower. Let's say your ALF. I have your ALF, and I want to decide that I want to lay a certain flavor on it. Maybe it's a grapefruit or whatever. You know, how hard is it to lay that in there, given the fact that the plants are going to, the males are going to be up and gone that quickly? It's not like I can re-veg an autoflower male. Do you understand?
That's correct. Selection at that point is key, and then keeping them familial. inbreeding them. You know, you start seeing desired traits and your most vigor comes out of that free. So if you want to add something to that, say you want to add that grapefruit flavor in, I think, one, you're going to have to wait at least three generations because you're going to have to select male and female each generation, which is, you know, the one caveat to the whole breeding situation. So it's a little bit of work to get the desired traits that you want. So each, what I do is I typically look at each generation and see who resembles, you know, each parent. Take a look at the male, take a look for symmetry, take a look for smell, terpene profile, and then stress them both to make sure that, well, they don't permeate out on you. And then the next generation, continue that hunt. So it takes a little bit, takes a little bit of effort and work and a good nose and a good eye. And I think you can really get it down to what you want. A little bit of luck too. Now, you know, that's one of the things that we talked about is what comes out as your end result.
So I had a question for Jeff in particular. What advice do you have? So I'm currently working on an aquaponic cannabis book, but what kind of advice do you have for other aspiring cannabis writers, you know, in particular for people trying to, you know, get a book out there? What advice do you have, you know, and as far as just getting a book from their concept phase to the market?
So hard. You know, writing a book is, I liken it to being a rabbit going down into your hole. And you got to go down in that hole, and you got to write down in that hole, and you got to stay down there until the book is done. You know, and when your spouse calls you up for dinner, you got to stay in the hole. You know what I mean? Because every time you leave it, you have to go back down again and reorganize and blah, blah. So discipline is the first thing. And frankly, if you're a big stoner, that can be very, very difficult. The second thing I find to be really sort of interesting with regard, there are a gazillion cannabis books out there. If you expect your book to be published, it's got to be different than everybody else's cannabis book. So right away, you've got to limit yourself to what I call the pornography factor. You know, you got to, if your book is dependent on having beautiful pornographic bud porn, you're not going to get published. You can do it yourself. You can publish yourself. But there's just too many coffee table, this is a great looking plant, this is what my flowers look like books. So that's can't work. You gotta have some hook that's going to catch the eye of a pretty sophisticated growing crowd. There are no better growers, gardeners, cultivators on earth than the cannabis grower, period. The experienced cannabis grower knows plants like nobody else. And I am convinced you could take an experienced cannabis grower and stick them on an island with a plant they've never seen before, and they would excel. And you know, that's the thing. So if you're writing a book, it's got to be able to feed those people who already know how to do it. Unless you're doing something like I'm doing, which is writing for novice people. And even there, I'm writing a book for people who already know how to grow a tomato, who already know how to be organic. I'm not telling, you know, come on, go read some other books. This is not what this book is all about. You know, this is to introduce you to a new plant, and they're going to hold your hand a little bit while you grow one or two of them, you know, and then you get as good as Dan. Nah, I'm kidding, Dan. Obviously, you got to grow more than one or two of them to get that good. But, yeah, so that's, you know, it's very difficult to do. My advice would be, don't do it. My second piece of advice would be don't do it if you want to make any money. And my third piece of advice would be don't do it if you're married. So there I go.
I thought you were going to say, I'm surprised you didn't say, well, first you go and write for a magazine or a newspaper for 20 or 30 or 40 years. And
yeah, well.
So this was a challenge because you didn't have a bunch of 400 character notes to put a book together. You had to actually write a book.
Yeah, really. Really? Well, and all three of my books, I've had to do that, but you're right. The format, the newspaper column format that I've developed over the years is very helpful. You know, each little thing is 400 or 500 words and then on to the next subject, you know, but this is sort of this was a tough one. You know, I mean, okay. So I'm telling people they're growing plants. They got to go out and, you know, maybe think about getting an artificial light that works. You know what I mean? You know, everybody who grows a tomato plant is a piece of junk purple fluorescent light left over from some time ago. You know what I mean? That's not what you want here. You know, you want to think about the good LED or a nice,
yeah.
You know, you really want to do it upright. You want a tent. If you can get one, that's just sort of makes it cool and fun and manageable. And
I hate tents myself, but you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, a lot of people do, but on the other hand,
like being in a crowd, you know.
Well, if I didn't have one, my wife would say, "This house stinks. Get rid of that." You know what I mean? So you know, you got to do that kind of stuff. But God, they're fun to grow. And if you're watching this and you haven't ordered your seeds right away already, I'm peeing in my pants here. You know, folks, we're all so excited about this plant. Do it. Don't buy the book. Just plant the plants, for God's sake.
Man, there was synthetics. This is an off-the-wall question, maybe, but do we have any psilocybin books coming down the line from Jeff Rowenthal?
God. You know, I've only done mushrooms a couple of times. Not that I'm against it by any means. I love the idea, but here's the thing about mushrooms. I don't think we want to popularize mushrooms the way we popularize cannabis. It's a different drug altogether. It requires not to grow, but to use a much higher degree of sophistication, I think.
I agree.
I think you could just walk into cannabis and not ever having done it before. It's just going to be fine. It's pretty hard to hurt yourself. But I think with you know, some of these other drugs, you can do some pretty psychic damage or some really wonderful things that you're not taking advantage of, which is just as important. So.
We had another question. Can we expect any more from Jeff's teaming with series? Do you have any more teaming with books in the queue?
You know, I think about them all the time, just because I love to write and I've got nothing else to do, and my wife is really irritated that I don't, and so I better find something to do. And so I think about what I could write next. I want to write a novel, you know, but who would read that?
Everyone.
I think about adding things to Teaming with Microbes. This whole rhizophagy thing has just got me, you know. I read all the time. I fool around with this microbiometer and test products that increase microbiomass and you know, but I can't quite come up with a concept that would fit into the series the way I want it to. But if you can think of an idea, let me know.
The two I would think of would be endophytic fungi and insects.
Yeah, you know, endophytic fungi is something that people are really, really beginning to take a pretty hard look at. I sort of pitched Teaming with Insects, but there are an awful lot of books that talk about insect-floral relationships. And so I don't think Timber Press was all that excited about that kind of that idea. In fact, they weren't excited about it at all. There's some pretty cool ways that plants react with with insects. And insects react with plants, and you know, but they just felt it'd been done before, which is interesting. So yeah, I'm always looking. I don't know, you know, we'll see. But yeah, if anybody can come up with a good idea, I'm all ears. I'm all ears. And I love giving the talks, and I love taking a look at some of these ideas of things that we've been doing for years that are just wrong. I'm sorry, I can't help it. You know, I don't like flushing either, but I mean, I know some of you guys are hydro guys and you believe in flushing and I don't. But, you know, there's just a bunch of those kinds of things that I think they're sort of fun to write about, but I don't know if there's a book in it or not.
No, so
what about straight up organic?
What are some of the other things that you think are kind of goofy, since that seems to be something you're passionate on?
Oh, you know, rotor tilling, of course, is goofy. What else is goofy? Gosh, it's kind of hard to say.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I got to limit myself. Maybe think about that for another book. Give myself a lot of trouble, you know?
Teaming with goofballs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was a question in chat for Jeff. Is your new book coming out on iBooks?
I don't know. I'll have to call up Tim. You know, Tim Cook and I were like this, you know, so see what he wants to do with it. I don't know. It's definitely, it should. But that's the thing that publishers do. And so I'm you know, I write them. They take care of them.
We had another chat question.
Yeah.
Can we expect any Jeff Lowenfeld brand CBD auto seeds anytime soon?
Hey, I hadn't been thinking about it, but if anybody wants to go in business, you know, I'm always ears. You know what I mean? I'm still thinking about this idea of getting some kind of a hat. You know, so I put a little design together. I put it on Instagram. You know, and everybody goes, "Jeez, what is that?" You know, they want a lid. They don't want a hat like that. You know what I mean, Roger? They don't want old fart hats. They want lids.
No. I would have had your hat on tonight if I would have bought it at the show. Remember, I asked you where your hat was.
None of you guys are wearing lids. You guys are all not wearing lids.
Everybody wants hats, man.
Okay. I'll have to look into it, you know.
It's
a lot of work.
Who's making branded Tams for us dreadlock folk?
I love it. Yeah, you know, people
probably someone in Jamaica.
Yeah, right.
I would say just even a gardener Jeff Habini would be pretty dope, you know.
It's hard for me to believe.
You'd probably sell a bunch of those, man. Maybe in Barnes and Nobles.
Whew. There's got to be the way to make some money. You know what I mean? Because certainly you don't make it on the books. I'll tell you that right now.
That's a bummer to hear because. Like I said earlier, and opened the show with you, the influence has been so big. So,
but that's what you write them for. You write them for the influence. You don't write them for the money. You write them to change the world. You know what I mean? Just like I always tell people, and I'm going to do it right now. If you're a gardener and you don't have a row in your garden dedicated to feed the hungry, you're not a real gardener, because gardeners share, and we share everything we have, and we grow extra stuff. And so, put an extra row in your garden. And if you're a cannabis gardener, then you grow a couple of extra cannabis plants, and you take that stuff and you give it to a vet or somebody who can't afford it, somebody who needs it, you know, because that's what we do. We share. So let's plant a row for the hungry. Done. Sorry.
Cheers.
Where were we?
Totally agree. Yep.
And on that note, it's really a shame that you don't see more space for that in the legal market in a lot of these states. We've had other guests such as Wayne Jussman, and, you know, some of the other crew from Dennis Barone's people that have come on and talked about how, you know, the ability to do that legally anymore is becoming, you know, harder and harder to have that, you know, ability to grow for good. And, you know, it really sucks, and how we need to, you know, make sure that we're protecting that with all these newer cannabis bills. There's still, you know, half the country still needs to legalize.
Right.
Guys, make sure that's part of the fight when you're going for those bills.
Oh, I agree.
Part of that reasoning, real quick, Jeff, to Steve, is because they keep abolishing the medical marijuana caregiver laws, and that's why that's happening. Nobody can do it. So Jeff wanted to move on.
I don't. I think this is very important. I mean, cannabis has become the gateway to taxation, and it's everybody's favorite toy to play with. And, you know, New York State's thinking about you can buy it, but you're not going to be able to grow it. What the hell is that crap? You know, they tried that in Washington State. That's bullshit. This is a plant, and at some point in time, we need to just step in. We created the monster. We need to tame the monster. You get a little bit of taxation money out of it, and after that, screw you. This is not your golden calf. This is something that we wanted. I mean, people in my generation have wanted since 1970s. There've been, you know, people older than me wanted it longer than that. We finally get it, and God damn it, why are we using it to pay for the taxation of the world? It's just, this is a plant. We don't tax tomato plants. We don't tax, you know, good God. I'm done.
I'm 100% with you, dude. Like, I applied for and have a hemp license. I own 10 acres, and I have a 1 acre spot that I have 10,000 square feet of THC cannabis. I'm recreational licensed. I've done the whole thing. It's been every bit of horrible. It's, you know, destroyed. It's been horrible, right? You heard the stories. I won't go there. I got 2 acres of hemp going, and it's every bit of wonderful. I have all the permissions of agriculture and tomato plants that I'm accustomed to. And I, you know, It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable what it is. And so in my mind, I honestly am waiting for the moment that the big companies come in to change the regulation, say, you know, from 0.03% THC to unlimited. And then even though I will lose all this money, I'm behind me to my garden back here, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I will lose all that money that was invested into this recreational business. Fuck it. Like, free the fucking plant and let us all grow it, dude. Like, you know, because there really should, we should be, it makes no sense.
Well, I say there are 75 to 85 million gardeners who once a week read a garden column, read a newspaper column, read a magazine column on gardening. That's an awful lot of people, and once they start growing this stuff, I think they're going to see.
It's just everybody that grows it. It changes everybody that grows this plant.
Right. Now, well, I don't know how you guys feel. One of the things I think we need to do is call it cannabis and not marijuana anymore. I'm against the word marijuana. I think we are doing that. We're getting there. And I think we need to, and I've mentioned this on other podcasts, we need to use 420 day in a constructive political fashion as opposed to party. It's a party day now, but it shouldn't be a party day, because 420 is the one day of the year when we have the entire attention of the media. They all do a 420 story. You name it, every TV station, every radio station, every newspaper, every magazine. And if we are capable of once and for all getting rid of the stigma by saying stop calling it marijuana on 420 day, no more marijuana. We're saying cannabis from now on. And PBS, you know, Judy Woodruff, stop using the word marijuana on 420 when she gets, you know, comes in and interviews you. We can change this stuff and get people to start thinking right, so that we treat this just like we do tomatoes and snap peas.
Well, it might be a big foul swoop, like, because, like, I'm trying to talk about my THC cannabis versus my hemp cannabis, and I'm like, God damn it, it's all the same plants. You guys really why are you doing this to me?
Right. Exactly. I mean, you know, and if you look at the seed, you can't tell a difference. You look at the plant, you can't tell a difference. Goodness gracious. And for some of the plants, if you smoke it, you can't tell the difference. You know, I mean, geez, it's just so stupid. But we will change it. We have to. I mean, it is just, it's crazy. In Alaska, we call it the marijuana, you know, the Marijuana Act. Now, they did that in Hawaii, and they realized they made a mistake. They went back and changed the name. So now they can't, you know, they took the word marijuana out. You know, so I mentioned that to a couple of legislators in Alaska. They said, oh, it's cost so much money. I said, cost money? You do it the way we would do it. You pass a bill that says wherever the word cannabis, marijuana is used, from now on in any reprintings, the word cannabis will be substituted. Period. That's all you have to do. You know, it'd get more publicity for whatever legislator did it, and they'd get reelected for the rest of the time. But nobody, you know, they're all craziness. So anyway, enough of that stuff. Autoflowers is the way to go. We gotta be pushing them, and I think we will be.
We had a comment from chat. They said teeming with fishes.
Teeming with fishes. Yeah, maybe teeming with fish shit.
Teeming with fish shit.
Oh, I think you guys got enough of those books out there, right? Doesn't Steve have one out? And Sylvia, you know, I mean, but what a great way to go, huh?
No. You brought up a lot of great points on that, and it's I really appreciate your time. I don't want to tie you up too much longer. We've held you hostage for 2 hours.
Wow.
So I don't want
to for an old man, that's a long time not to pee. I got to tell you that. That's how I know I'm older than Roger. I mean, his eyes aren't floating like mine are.
Well, because I got up while you were talking and went. That's why. I got one that I noticed in chat earlier, and you never addressed it specifically. So since, you know, they had gone to a lot of chat questions very early on the show.
I don't even know how to get to chat on this.
Well, there's a little button. There's a little thing that looks like a little I don't know. I'm like on, so I figured it out. There's a little button you can press, and it'll turn on the chat. Like there's a little text chat. But no, it's on YouTube, actually. This is a YouTube. We monitor the YouTube channel that's being broadcast live. on YouTube right now, and we've got all these people there chatting about the show. And
okay.
So that's where all these questions from chat come from, is from YouTube. And
yeah.
And so on the Growing the Fishes podcast. So what early on in the thing, because you had brought up how you could do an autoflower. We all know you can grow an autoflower under any photo period because it's not photo. So what the guy asked in chat was, do you have a preference?
Yeah, I grow mine at about 20-hour light, and I only set it off for 4 hours because I know my wife's going to complain about the light being on when she gets up and goes and takes a pee. So that's the 4 hours when it's dark. But, yeah, I like 20 hours. I've done it. I've done 12. I've done 16. I've done 24. They all work.
Right.
What I think is important is the intensity of the light, the best light you have. It really needs good light. I mean, I've grown the same plants outdoors in an outdoor greenhouse that gets half a day of light and indoors in a tent, and they both flower. And I get, I get decent flowers on the one outdoors, but they're not nearly as good. If the light quality is high, you're going to get really high quality flowers.
Really cool. So you like 24, and I found that I like some darkness too when I have grown them. And Dan, did you want to chime in on this, like, since you're an autoflower guy?
You're the expert, Dan.
I don't know about expert, but I appreciate that. You know, I agree with Jeff. I do believe that the plant needs a dark cycle or needs a little bit of rest. There's benefits in that cycle that I think I've seen the best results from. I've grown, like you, Jeff, 24, 20, and 4, 18, 6, depending on temperature and time of year, too, you know, just to assist the grow room, make sure the environment's controlled. I will agree with you 100% about light intensity. You know, light intensity is really key. And I've grown under everything from, you know, high-intensity discharge all the way through quantum panels on LED. I've got Cobb technology, and it seems that the higher end of the LED and the more intense you can get that light, you're correct. The buds are just that much more amazing. They do really, really, really well under high-intensity lighting.
Okay, so what is your favorite? I have to ask now. What is your favorite since you've got Cobbs and quantum boards? Because I have a friend that works with me on the website that builds quantum boards and teaches people how to build quantum boards and even better lights than that. What is your favorite out of the Cobb lights and quantum boards? What do you like?
Cobbs are fantastic. They are really efficient. So if you look at the power bill, they do grow some very dense. I would say I've probably got my highest yield so far underneath Cobb technology. As far as, you know, the average grower, the people who want to start this at home, I think a quantum board would be ideal. Stay away from the blue color, the blue-purple color if you can. It does lead with that, but I've noticed, now this isn't on autos, that it increases transpiration rates and it sucks the calcium and magnesium right out of that plant. And I think it's because of their quick growth rate that all of that is accelerated by that spectrum. Not that they're horrible. I'm not knocking anybody out there that makes them or uses them. That's just personal experience.
Yeah, I think we've all found that we're liking the white full spectrum kind of lamps. And Samsung and Cree make some excellent, excellent strips. I was watching video earlier about some Samsung strips that they can make a 2x4 or 4x4 lamp. And that was just incredible. You can actually just stick them on with sticky tape onto the heat sink. You know, it's crazy, man.
Yeah,
you know,
it doesn't much at all.
Yeah, it's really, yes, I'm looking into that too. But anyway, thank you. I yield back to whoever wants to ask another question, or Steve, if you just wanted to wrap up the show or whatever you were doing.
I just wanted to let Jeff go. I feel like we've held him for a long time, and I know his time is valuable, and he's traveling, so I'm sure he wants to get to dinner or whatever else he's got going on out there in Oregon. So
I certainly appreciate it. I'm going to be down in, Palm Desert, at Canna Grove, when is that, 16th, 17th, of this month, and then God knows where. Always looking for gigs. Always like meeting people. Always like talking about cannabis, that's for sure. It's a great plant, and it does so well with microbes and you run into people like you guys, and whew, wow, you can just go on forever. You know, it's such a great plant, isn't it?
Will you be at MJ BizCon or Emerald Cup at all?
I'll be at Emerald Cup for sure. You know, I think they're both about the same time, unfortunately, this year.
Yeah, they're back. It's 5 days of cannabis finals.
Whoa. Yo. Hold on a second. I just lost my earphones. Yeah, 5 days of cannabis, but boy, a lot of travel and a lot of money. You know what I mean? I would never miss Emerald Cup. To me, Emerald Cup is the primo of primo shows. It's just so much fun. And the people there are so terrific, and we just have a great time. You guys going to be there as well?
I'm super stoked to be there, dude, and I think we may have a booth, so.
Ooh,
Jeff? No way, how cool.
Regenerative Seed Co., so maybe we can get a...
Maybe there's a little spot to sell some books, huh?
We'd love to do that. That would be fucking awesome.
We'll have to talk. I might even have a hat you gave me one of those years.
Yeah, you and Tom, dude. I didn't realize who he was until after I looked it up and I was like, oh.
Yeah. We're talking about Tom Alexander, and since you mentioned him, I'll tell you. I mean, I dedicated the book to Tom. For those of you who don't know Tom Alexander, he is. How do I put this? He's one of the unsung heroes of the cannabis movement. Here's a guy that got beat up left and right by the federal government for growing a simple little plant. He defended us left and right. He got beat up again and again. His businesses were impacted, you know, and whereas a lot of us went out and did other things and made money and da 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 da. He fought the good fight and never really, really, he was never really rewarded properly for everything that he did. And I just think Tom Alexander walks on water. And so I dedicated this book to him. And if you ever get a chance, he's the guy that sort of popularized the word Sensimilla. He wrote a magazine called Sensimilla Tips. And if you get a chance to see any of those old copies, wow, what a wealth of information. So, anyway.
We had him on the show in one of the early episodes right before I think we had you on. Or right before or right after we had you on. So.
Yeah, we hang together quite a bit. So we'll be together at the Emerald Cup, that's for sure.
Awesome. Can't wait.
Cool.
That'll be my first cup, so I will see you there.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it.
So, Jeff, just to reiterate, what's the name of your book coming out, and when can people get it, and where can they get it?
Okay, you know, you think I'd remember the name. It's DIY Auto Flowering Cannabis, A New Way to Grow. It is available on Amazon now as a pre-order. It will be published on October 22nd. And it's New Society Publishers out of Canada. And I urge you to go take a look at their site as well, because they've done some really interesting quasi-radical books that I think people will enjoy. So, hey, this has been a lot of fun, and I appreciate it. Anytime, guys. It's always good to see you guys. It's just a lot of fun. What a great community we live in. It doesn't matter what your politics are, we always seem to get along. That's what gardening's about, whether you're growing cannabis or anything else.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Jeff, as always. And it's always fun hanging out with you, even when we're just at conferences. And thanks again for taking the time to join us on the show.
Sounds great. Okay, folks, have a good one.
Brother.
All right. You got it.
And Josh, it looks like you got...
Okay, so, yeah, Putin, you need to, like, display Josh's greenhouse there, like his big screen. You need to put
this
it on
is crazy, you guys.
Yeah, that's
so
beautiful.
You see this light right there? That light is at the bar that holds that light is at 10.5 feet tall. I'm standing on top of the tops of the beds, reaching as high as I can. This is insane. It's not like that. Yeah, it's hard to show you how big this is. But this, you know, all the way down, that's 12 inches. Watch, we go all the way, dude. Way, way up. These are 10 feet. These, when they finish these, I don't know. I got how I'm gonna trellis them. They'll be, you know, 12 to 15 feet tall up in here.
Hey, Josh, what is your spacing there? Because I noticed, I was going to ask you that. Huh?
This is a fuck up. This is a fuck up. So let's understand that first and foremost. These plants, everything in this garden should have been harvested months ago. And I just haven't been able to do it. I was supposed to manually dep them, so. But it's cool still. You know, that's why I'm showing it off, because it's cool to see big fucking plants. It's awesome. It's going to be a big harvest. But this is not what I intended. So I just want to be, you know,
well,
open and
I'm sorry,
about that.
But I call a fuck up when you don't get a harvest. So you're going to have harvest, so I'm bullshit on that.
Look at this reunion. Look at this reunion island. This is,
oh,
you know, this is my fist here, so it's big, you know.
Oh,
she's a big bitch.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
And I topped her at 6 feet, and then now she just pushed up. So the next 2 weeks in my life are actually cloning everything in this garden. And, you know, the greenhouse is just one thing. I have 10,000 square feet of bullshit. And I'm trying to get through here. I don't know if you guys can still see.
Yep, we can.
So it's a tremendous challenge.
I know what it's like going through that greenhouse, because I was there. Remember? Yeah. We were tall.
Right, here's the, I think this is, oh, I just passed it. Here it is. There she is. Can you see that? There?
Is that the one that grew back?
That's the,
the same one.
Yeah, dude, all the way up.
Okay, so guess what? I still have a clone of it, and it's still growing. Yeah. Has it shown?
No, it's not. It's, I would say female, but
it still
has
not
shown
for me either. And I have none
of these Sour Patch Kids have shown. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm looking over here. Here's one that's starting to show. So
you're just starting to do the
yeah, music. I'm pulling males, so I'll walk down. And we'll walk down on this dude. This is the Chile Verde. So I'll take him, and I'll cut it. What I'll do is I'll cut him down. I'm trying to show you, if you can see. I have, you know, bare stock with my hand right there. You know, 3 feet up. And I'll give 1, 2, 3 node lengths all across the top of this plant, and I'll cut it off, like just flat top it. Make sure there's 3 nodes strong, and then I'll give it a week, and then I will come down and transplant it, you know, dig it up out of the bed and transplant it into a pot and take it into a mail room. And it was really cool. I spent a little bit talking to Mr. Green Jeans about this plan, and he totally concurred. So what I'm going to do is take all my males into one room, and then, you know, select my females and narrow down my males by percentage sequentially, so that I end up with, you know, males that represent the females I'm selecting, and then move forward. And then I think, actually, because I have so many different cultivars, I think, and I've been talking about this with maybe Tara and different people, like, we're going to have a Deckard Cup where we get everyone to come, and I don't know how I'm going to have to figure it out legally, but where everyone can come and help me sift through all these fucking cultivars.
Well, and don't forget, I've got mails for you as well, remember?
Yeah, right? So they just, like, it goes deep. Yeah.
Looks like I have 3 female Northern Lights and 1 male.
Awesome. I have a bunch of males. I have a bunch of females. I get it all.
But I'm still waiting for some to show.
These are, I believe, the Yetis. Let's see, yeah, Yeti Crossberry White. This is, and that's why I've been, mostly why I've been so absent as I've been working. So I've built a stream through here that goes out to a huge pond back there, huge, behind this fence, and then a big greenhouse pad out there for growing hemp. So I'll be doing both.
Yeah, so isn't that, you cleared that off back there for your hemp, right? Wasn't that it?
Yeah, yep.
1 acre? How many acres?
Well, but behind us, it's not even an acre. Well, right here is just enough for a greenhouse. And then there's 2 acres of seed production up in the front of the property.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah. These are the Northern Lights. And they're strong, dude. These are in the ground directly and in the worst ground that I have in my property. And they're like seriously moving, so I'm really impressed.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I have one male, and he's strong. Like, he is a strong looking good. The nose, or it looks real good. Like, I would be really impressed with it.
This is my male. I'm starting to stack my males right here. Watch this.
Oh my gosh, look at all those. Holy shit.
This is the unknown dog walker. So this came out of this grew up a volunteer out of a pot that was tagged with dog walker. So I assume it's a dog walker dog walker plant that was crossed with some sort of male in my garden.
I actually got to smoke some dog walker rosin this weekend while I was at the Indo Expo.
This is here we go. Kaya's coffee on Kenny's Royal Kush, done by Primrose. And these are just the early selections. These are some sangria punch. Dominion seeds. And these ones are, actually, I don't know what they are.
How about the lemon pine tar from Cora Genetics?
Ooh, where is that?
I have 2 males, I think, and the other one didn't make it.
I know the general region. It's so hard.
But you've got it growing, right? You've got it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I just, like, look, I have to sift through all this.
Okay, cool. I didn't know if you had it growing. I was so excited to have that one. It looks like I'm not going to have it now.
I told you, cool. It's mapped out, and awesome. It's all, I just can't walk you to it right now.
Oh, no, that's totally cool. I'm just really glad you're growing it, because I was really excited to get that from him and grow that this year.
So here's some crimson plants.
Look at all that. My gosh.
And this is basically 2 weeks of me fucking putting proper compost tea on proper fish shit.
Wow.
If you would have seen this before, it was like...
Man, it's really been beneficial on them, man. They look fantastic.
Yeah, you were out here, dude. You saw it, man. This place is cranking. Like, everyone looked at me. I know it. It's like, oh, man, what are you doing? But things are jamming.
Yeah, you definitely got to turn it around. Those teas definitely have helped, man. They look fantastic.
Yeah, this row is doing really good, too. And it, you know, it represents what I'm focusing on. You know, so each plant here is 36 inches to 40 inches tall, I would say. It's fun, dude. Now the fun begins, man. I wish you were up here, man.
I know.
It's like I want to hold. That's why I'm trying to like come up with this idea, the Dutch's Cup. How do I fucking do it to bring everyone to help me, like, sift through the flavors, you know, and make a fun event, you know, out of it type deal.
Make the first initial cross and see who plays out from there.
Yeah.
tube it. Tubing it would be the best. I mean, one of the beneficial things that we can have is you have an ideal mother cut. Even though we'd be selecting against autos or any other genetic, you can always back cross it to that line to bring those traits forward again. If you want to enhance that side of it, you really like the mom. The mom was producing the aromas and the terp profile that you wanted. Keeping her around, you know, yes, you do have to start from the ground again once you do the back cross, but you can then have the better potential of bringing that forward, getting your end result. Ducks are looking good, or happy at least.
Yeah, they're doing good. I can't wait for this winter to get this pond system online. You'll be blown away, dude, when you've seen this, the work we've done. The video is hard to show it, and in here, we really haven't done anything, but out there is where the big work. It's been cool. I've had a lot of fun.
So are you allowed to have a volunteer harvest party?
I don't know. I got to figure it out. That's what I kind of want to do. Yes.
What if you went through a part-time employment agency or something? There could be something there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there. I don't know.
It's a good thought. Yeah. No, I don't know. It's definitely, I mean,
There's a lot of weed,
and it's stupid because in reality, like, no one's trying to, do anything shifty. It's just like, I need other heads.
Yeah, you need more
intelligent
help
heads. Not just help, but, like, both help physically and but heads. Like, know how to sift through what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because I can't smoke enough of it. Well, no, I mean, I can, but, like, it's hard for me to sift through the differences in all of it adequately. It's impossible. There's so much. So any help that I can get from people who are, like, you know, have good taste and understand how to, like, you know, sift through genetics, that's, like, so valuable.
Make it into rock. For
what I have.
There for you.
We can squish it. And that's what I'm thinking. Like, we just have a big event. And yep. I got to figure out the legal how to do it, you know, whether we run it through stores or however we work it out legally to make it work, but where we can have, you know, you can smoke, come and smoke the rosin, the hash, the flower, and sift through it and like have some sort of coating. I don't know. It's a challenge. But it would be cool.
Awesome. It's really quite a bit of different flowers you got going on. I was just going to say, Dan, why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you do, and we haven't really had a chance to talk about yours.
Thank you. I work with otters. I do selective breeding based on them for the last 10 years now, something along those lines, providing medicine for myself. And I've got a few different varieties that are out there and available right now. Just stuff trying to get it out and, you know, letting patients, you know, access to their own meds, trying to get something out there and stable and, you know, show the viability in both, you know, home grow or commercial side. So, been growing for a while, but spent the last, like I was saying earlier, and Joshua was saying, 10 years working with autos.
Awesome. Is there any other, I'll ask you the same question I asked Jeff. Is there any other traits that you've noticed tend to occur more often in autos than when you're breeding photo period cultivars, or have you not done them? Photos,
I dealt with photos very early on, so it got me my start in trying to understand the mechanics of the plant as well as how to bring the two together and search out what I want. I don't think there's any like standout traits between the two different, you know, I don't want to say different because that's not, it's almost like it's a subspecies, but as far as like the mechanics of the breeding side go, no. But what I have seen is that ruderalis is almost like cancer, for lack of a better term. Once you get it in, it's really hard to get it out. It really likes to take over beyond F3. The
Most common thing I would say is the root zone stress that we were talking about earlier. That would be the biggest caveat in understanding how the plants function and grow in the breeding cycle and the growth cycle compared to photos. Because like a photo, you can mess it up. You can, you know, send it back into veg, fix your mistakes, and then move forward. With otters, you got to keep it kind of on your A game from the beginning to the end. So I think that's the biggest difference in breeding the two different varieties.
That's interesting because a lot of people really think that just because they're growing an auto, they don't really have to do anything. And you're saying it's harder in a way. It's better. It works out, but you've got to pay attention and be on top of your game and on top of the grow with it.
Correct. And I honestly think that's what taught me the most is you have to pay attention to it. And inadvertently, I learned a lot about the plant as far as like being able to select them. You start to see things happen before. Like I've gotten to the point now, I can almost identify a male before it shows its sex. There are certain traits that the way that an otter forms at the top when they're growing. And the only reason that I've picked up on that is because you have to stay on top of it, like you were saying.
Oh, yeah, it's like an everyday thing. Like Steve was bringing up on the big-ass farm he's building right now where, you know, you have to go out there every morning, and three or four of you got to go out there and look at every plant and look at every little thing, see if you got a problem, see if you got a pest, you know, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. I learned that a long time ago. When I built my hydroponic farm in 2005, I learned something real quick. You never get another day off the rest of your life.
No. You know, it's funny. A lot of people joke about, you know, who takes care of who. But if you think about it, that plant's got a lot of control in making sure you take care of it. You know, it teaches you how to nurture, too.
Oh, yeah, because you don't want to lose it.
No. You don't want to lose all that work. You don't, especially if you're 5 or 6 weeks in, the last thing you want to do is lose it, watch it just dwindle, you know. I think one of the biggest issues in the Pacific Northwest, of course, is the unfriendly late-season climate. We're wet. Mold and mildew are treacherous up here. And the last thing you want to see is you had a great season, everything's on par, and then you just lose it all at the end, you know.
Yeah, that's unless you live on the eastern side of Washington.
That's fair. You know, up here in the Upper Peninsula, it gets a little funky in the wintertime. We get real damp, and it gets real wet.
For sure. Alrighty, well, we'll have to get you on for your own episode sometime. Thanks for
joining. I love it, man. I'm always, you know, like I was talking to Jeff earlier, like my excitement about it and people getting on the bandwagon and being able to have a voice. You know, I really haven't got an opportunity to really get out there and talk about it. And I tend to shy away a little bit, and Tara knows that. Yeah, I'd love it. I'd really enjoy that.
Awesome. Well, you were great tonight, man. It was very enjoyable to hear your knowledge and what you're doing and your passion. Really, I mean, really, I very much enjoyed you being on. So don't shy away from things. Jump out there and take it by the hand, you know, and embrace it.
Well, thank you, and I really appreciate that. That means a lot. And you know, I'm starting to become more comfortable with it. And it's not because I'm really try to hide anything. It's just kind of how my mentality has been for so many years. You know what I mean? You know, and
I live in South Carolina, dude.
Yeah, it's a changing thing. It's new.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really funny, Josh. I know it's been really cool doing the conferences with you, and especially when we do the East Coast talks. It's really funny how different it is with the people are ultra receptive, but also like, you know, really almost like weirded out in a strange way that they're able to talk about it in the open. And it's kind of funny and it's really cool to be able to see them kind of become comfortable with it again.
Yeah. I think that's really my favorite part is, you know, each state that goes legal, you start to see all these people that are just starting to pop up out of nowhere and, getting to meet them, getting to interact with them is honestly, it's great because like you said, it was something that nobody really wanted to, you know, talk about in public. And now it's accepted as we can. And being able to have that outlet now is just, I think it's making the community stronger.
Well, I love it. The fact that here, because with the national legalization of hemp, we've got all that popping up and there's been instantly there were associations
and all these people that were interested in farmers, and it's really been very much similar to what I saw when at Josh and Layton's Regenerative Organic Cannabis Conference, which was unbelievable last year. And I see the same camaraderie and passion about these people, because we've all been just waiting and waiting and waiting to have that freedom, you know. And I still can only grow hemp, but I'm glad at least I can do that. I can be in the industry, you know.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to do anyway. And, you know, and over here, here's something that I don't know if you realize, because you may or may not follow what's going on in the South, like our friend Greg in Asheville and friends in Tennessee and North Carolina. It's an agricultural commodity here. There's absolutely no medical stigma or hoops to jump. There's a little bit of hoops to jump through, but it's a very simple 2 or 3 page, you know, like 2 or 3 page application, $250, and you're a hemp farmer.
That's not too bad. I have a friend actually in Tennessee who's got quite a lot of land that he's looking to do something with, and I think he's going to try that approach too. But he just doesn't have any experiences, you know.
There was an enormous insect behind you, like.
Yeah, I saw that a couple times too. Pretty good size.
Yeah, that was. I was like, hold on. I literally had to go back and watch it to see if a little bit off or if it was the video. But there's most definitely a large insect on the wall behind you.
I totally missed it. I was talking in chat. Good evening, everyone in chat, by the way. I never did say hi to everybody.
You talking about me or Dan? Who's got the big giant bug behind him?
You do.
Dan.
You do.
Oh, you? Roger?
Well, I'm probably too heavy for him to pick up, so I'm not scared.
If I got anything in here, I got an issue.
It's just a bug, you know.
Alrighty.
Well, that's pretty wild, though, yeah. Pretty well.
I think it's about getting that time, and then we'll wrap up the show. Thanks everybody for joining us. Jeff Lowenfeld, thanks a lot for joining us. Check out his books, Teaming with Microbes, Teaming with Fungi, Teaming with Nutrients, and his new book on autoflowers. It'd be really, really good to check out a new book from Jeff, as always. Dan, why don't you tell everybody how they can find out more about yourself and you know, about what you do.
If you're looking for information about autos, check out autoflower.net. You're gonna have a wealth of resource and information there. There's a huge community that we've kind of festered over the last getting close to 10 years there now. So if you're looking for basic information, then there and check that out.
That was autoflower.net?
That's correct.
Okay, I wanted to put it in chat. I wanted to make sure I put it right. Okay.
Autoflower.net. I do have seeds available to the market, both commercially as well as through DC Seed Exchange and Oregon Elite. A couple of varieties out there if you want to get into autos. Got some stuff that offers some really nice color, and got some stuff that offers some really good paying meds. So you guys should check that out. And it's under Mandalorian Genetics. That might help too. My bad.
How do you spell Mandalorian?
Mandalorian.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and we'd love to have you come back on to do a whole episode with you on Autoflower and autoflower.net and all the hard work that you've been doing, because it sounds like you'd be a really awesome guest.
Right.
Is it okay to post your Instagram?
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yep, go ahead and post that. It's listed underneath the same thing. I really appreciate the kind words, really do. I would definitely be interested to come back and chat. And thanks for having me tonight. Really appreciate it. It's been a fantastic experience, guys. Thank you so much.
It was cool.
Yeah, I appreciate it. What about you, Roger? How do people find you?
Well, I've got I want to say thank you, guy, you and Josh, for starting to post some shit on Facebook. It's been really cool to see. So I got Roger Latewood on Facebook, and of course you can find me Latewood at ilovegrowingmarijuana.com. And sorry, Jeff, I probably won't be able to quit using that word in that particular instance because I get paid. So, and I don't think the company's going to change their name because we don't want to call marijuana anymore. But anyway. My offhand joke. I got my machete out in case that bug comes back, you know.
So I'm ready. It was a great show tonight. Thanks Dan, and thanks Jeff. Jeff's always awesome. He's hilarious tonight too, I'll tell you what. And that's about it for me. You can find me there or there.
Jeff is always funny.
It's yeah, fun. He is.
I remember hanging out with Jeff. I always remember laughing pretty hard.
Yep.
Every time I hang out with him at a conference, man, I'm always laughing.
I got to make the Emerald Cup this year too. I'm gonna reach out to the boss, and since you know he helps me out a little bit when I want to go to something like that, and it's really good for the company. I think that I have to get to the Emerald Cup. That's the biggest thing. I definitely want to go to as many regenerative organic cannabis conferences as I can, but the Emerald Cup is top on my list for something besides Josh and Layton's, you know, conference.
And, what about you, Josh? How can people find you?
DutchBlooms.net and regenerativeorganiccannabis.com. And soon, regenerativeseedco.com.
Awesome. And you can find me at potentponics.com, potentponics, YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, all the different places. And you can also check us out down at Kind Alternative in Glenpool, Oklahoma. If you want to come buy some flower. We don't have anything on the shelves yet from the cultivation, but we're probably 45 days away from starting to get some of the outdoor out. And, you know, not long after, we'll start to have some of the, maybe another 35 days after, we'll have some of the aquaponics out. Almost finished the construction, the aquaponics, and getting ready to put some stuff out right away. So looking forward to that. So thanks a lot for everyone for listening. Thanks a lot again, Jeff, for taking the time to join us, and we'll be back on the normal schedule. I apologize for having a little bit of time off there, just with the chaos of adjusting to the new YouTube stuff. It took us a week to get back on the normal schedule. Thanks a lot for watching, and I hope...
Whoops, sorry. Time out. Where do we find Tara?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I just realized.
That's okay. It's entirely live on YouTube or on Instagram. And by the way, I did record some of that conference with Jeff Lowensfeld at the Indo Expo. So,
awesome.
On my channel, by the way.
Sweet.
Have a good night. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for not forgetting me there, Dutch.
Help you.
Yep. Sometimes I don't forget some things.
So back to Steve.
Oh, so I apologize about that, Tara. I feel bad. It's a little bit high. What happened is the new program, it shifts around and it showed you as having dropped off. I didn't see that you were still on there until it shifted over. So I apologize.
No problem. I forgive you.
Still getting used to the new system, so we'll get it fixed. Thanks a lot for everyone, and we'll be back again on Thursday. I don't know who the guest is yet, but I promise it'll be somebody cool. Take care.